to order. To begin with, I believe we probably got some minutes in our folder here. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of yesterday's meeting. Is there a motion? Representative Pinto moves that the minutes from April 16, 2015 are approved as presented. Any additions, corrections, questions, or comments on the minutes?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Just that we always make technical changes in case there are misspellings. Just have a, you know, run a check always. We don't need to point them out, but.
Thank you for noting that. Representative Erickson.
There is one in today's minutes, but I can speak offline.
Okay. Representative Erickson will work with staff to fix the technical spelling error. I bet it was a spelling error, Representative Erickson.
I bet it was. Thanks to Representative Marquardt, who called it to my attention. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, all in favor of approving the minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The minutes are approved with that one correction that Representative Erickson is helping chase down there. With that, members, are there any additional amendments or discussion on the A15-0452 amendment before us?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hurtas.
Before you get started, could you give us an idea of the of today's business?
Yeah, Representative Hurtas, I would like to, I know there's a lot of out-state people here. Our staff have endured so far 13 hours of discussion, and we've got Representative Simonson and Representative Anderson that have a long ways to drive. I know it's corn planting time, and Representative Anderson probably needs to get to that. And Representative Marquardt doesn't have a real short drive, I don't think. I would like for us, if we can sooner, but like for us to target 1 o'clock to get done. And if we could try to get all our amendments in by then, I think we would be reaching a good goal. Other thoughts or discussion around today? Representative Lucheski.
Mr. Chair, you know, I noticed, I'm not sure if it was Representative Dabney who noticed this, but I haven't seen a lot of agendas that actually had a time to adjourn, but this one is 3, and that was posted yesterday, so now it's 1. I'm not sure what's, I don't know if you knew you posted that this went to 3.
I wasn't aware that that was posted, Representative Lucheski. So the hope is that we can adjourn by 1 and hopefully get our amendments in. And our discussion on the bill. Discussion on the bill.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A35 amendment.
Okay. Representative Dabney moves the A35 amendment. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I always find line and page amendments a little challenging to get my brain wrapped around because they're because of the way they're written. And it's not wrong. I'm certainly not complaining. Don't misunderstand. It's just a challenge that I face with these. I don't know about you. But the A35 amendment deals with the reverse referendum proposal that you have in your bill. And as I recall, that requires just a 10% vote, or excuse me, 10% of the last, of the voters in the last election signing on to a petition. But it's only to a limited number of jurisdictions that you allow taxpayers to have this reverse referendum option. Amongst the folks that you're missing are the watershed organizations, for instance, who levy property taxes. But those aren't elected bodies. So I guess my first question is, since you tie the reverse referendum to the number of voters in the previous election, how do you envision that working in situations where the body is not elected? And so the number of voters in the last election doesn't have the same significance or meaning as it does you know, for city council, school board, the like.
Ms. Dalton, I don't think we have special taxing districts in the bill, do we?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, the bill as currently drafted only applies to counties and to cities with a population over 500. So this isn't an issue.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Dalton. So the amendment would create that issue, as I understand, Representative Dabney. Is that what you understand?
Mr. Chair, yes, because, you'd left those folks out. The watershed districts are an example. There are other special taxing districts. Maybe if Ms. Dalton could review for us 275.066 that you reference on page 195 of the bill. My apologies. It's just like I said, it's the challenge for me of line and page amendments and not knowing that section of statute.
Right from recall.
Yeah, right from recall. Mr. Chair, actually, I wouldn't be surprised if she could.
She has done it before.
Exactly.
Ms. Dalton. So as I understand it, as Ms. Dalton is digging through the statute book, Representative Dabney, so your intention here is to actually expand it to special taxing districts, including those that are unelected. Is that what the intent is?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay.
And if we need to think about a oral amendment to limit it to those special taxing districts that overlay populations of less than 500 to conform more with your intent in the bill, I'm certainly open to that.
Thank you. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney and members of the committee, the definition in 275.066 is a fairly extensive one. It includes watershed districts, sanitary districts, sewer districts, library districts, park districts, regional rail authorities, hospital districts, St. Cloud and Duluth transit authorities, regional development commissions, HRAs, port authorities, EDAs, the Met Council, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, the Metropolitan Mosquito Control District, and a number of very unique and special ones related to very individual things like the Croft Historical Park District, the Floodwood Area Ambulance District, and a few other sundries like that.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Ms. Dalton, my belief is that the Metropolitan Airports Commission has the authority to levy property taxes, but does not do that and instead relies on passenger fees. Am I right about that?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to phone a friend. I'm going to ask Steve, since he actually deals with some of that in his property tax modeling.
Mr. Ains.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I'm not sure about that. I'll try to look it up here while you go on.
Okay. Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you see this, there's an extensive list of unelected organizations that are entities in the state that levy property taxes. I shouldn't be surprised, but I am. I think, for instance, of the Three Rivers Park District, it's one of my favorites. They do suburban Hennepin County, so they don't levy property taxes in Minneapolis. I'm not a property taxpayer to the Three Rivers Park District. I believe Representative Lincheski would be. They provide great services, extensive. They actually may even go outside of Hennepin County in some of their...
don't like that.
That's a different conversation, Representative Lincheski. I think some of their parks are outside of Hennepin County. But they do great services. My kids learn to ski at Highland Ski. It's Highland Park Ski Area. Great place. They're building a new chalet there. Started over the winter, I think, and it will be building. It'll be opening up for next winter's ski season. They do great work, but they do levy property taxes. additionally, you know, the sanitary boards and that sort of thing are a little outside of my experience. Representative Pinto, the Port Authority issue that came up, would that touch St. Paul? Because you do a lot of your economic development, as I recall, through the St. Paul Port Authority rather than through a different economic development entity.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I will admit that I'm not certain. I believe that that is the case. We certainly could pursue, there may be somebody from St. Paul who could pursue it if it's important, but I don't know the answer to the question myself.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I recall, the TIF provision that the committee was good enough to put into the bill related to the Ford site actually cites the Port Authority. Or am I mistaken about that?
I remember the same.
Okay. All right. Because I think it came up either in committee when we were hearing the bill initially or when Representative Pinto offered his amendment, because people kind of poked their heads up. And I always have a hard time thinking of St. Paul with a port. And it just, I get different pictures in my head of a port that doesn't fit in St. Paul. But my point, Mr. Chair, is there's a lot of these entities across the state that, in fact, levy property taxes, but are unelected. I'm going to avoid the Metropolitan Council issue because that could turn into a long conversation, and I don't think we want that here today. But there are a number that levy property taxes, they weren't covered by the reverse referendum proposal in your bill. And I thought, good for the goose, good for the gander. The geese are coming back. It's springtime. And that we could extend this provision to all of these entities.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Any other discussion on the A35 amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the A35 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Other discussion on the A15-0452 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lanchester.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While I'm organizing one amendment here, if I could just take a minute to ask you about, I started to ask you yesterday, and then we had to adjourn, or I can't quite recall, but I was asking about items that were in the bill that never had a hearing, and you walked me through like four that were discussed, and then I raised two more provisions that never had a hearing and were never a bill. One was preventing the Met Council to do local debt for operating costs of transit, as I understand it. Is that one right? And that one I was a little confused about because I think that's current law. Because they do debt for capital, for buying their rolling stock. I'm wondering, first of all, if we could find out if that's already current law.
Yeah, the interpretation, and maybe Mr. Hines can talk about it, but the interpretation is that it's current law. That is some comfort language to make certain that it's clear, and that's what the intention, and that was my language. But Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, that's exactly correct. We believe that to be current law, that's been the case ever since 2001, and this was added as comfort language.
Okay, well, thank you for that, Mr. Chair. I just was trying to figure that out because I've never known the Met Council to attempt to do that, and I didn't think they had the legal authority to do it, but I get it. On the other one that I mentioned was the trying to understand the whole thing with the Sports Authority. So, and that seems like a pretty substantive piece of legislation that has a lot going on in it. I think it's And if I don't understand it correctly, because, there wasn't a hearing and there wasn't a bill, I thought it was you take the money from the Sports Authority and then you give it to the City of Minneapolis to their general fund, or maybe I'm not clear, maybe it's for their portion of the Vikings.
Representative Lanchisky, can we just have Ms. Dalton talk through it? She explained it to me a couple of times, and I think it sunk in, but
okay.
She's very good at it. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanchisky, there are three provisions in the bill, three sections of the bill that relate to this. Basically, all of the sales taxes collected, Minneapolis sales tax is remitted to the state, and then it is doled back out to the city, to the sports facility, and to the sports facility authority.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, can I just interrupt?
I'm already confused.
Representative Lencheski.
Okay, so I just want to ask Ms. Dalton to clarify something. Which sales tax are we talking about? The local Minneapolis sales tax, the county sales tax, or the state sales tax?
Do we have too many taxes, Representative Lencheski?
Well, if you live in Hennepin County, you pay a premium courtesy of our colleagues here, but yes. So there's three sales taxes there, so what are we talking about here?
We're finding common ground. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, in this case we are talking about the city sales tax.
The city, okay.
So, but all state and local sales taxes are collected by the state and then reallocated back to the jurisdictions, based on where it's collected. The Minneapolis sales tax is unique because a portion of it is going to fund the stadium, and a portion of the growth of any growth is supposed to be going to the Sports Facility Authority to cover additional related costs that were not really specified in the bill. I may phone a friend at some point in here because Ms. Templin is a little bit more familiar with some of the funding and how much have been anticipated versus how much is now anticipated. But there's $6.364 million anticipated in the $6.364 million anticipated by MMB in the that's going to be going to the Sports Authority. What under the supplemental growth provision, what's going to happen instead is that that's going to be reduced by $5.864 million. That $5.864 million is instead going to go straight to the city. The city is being allowed to keep it in its general fund, use it for any governmental purposes. That 5.864, and then its LGA for fiscal year 2016 only is being reduced by an equivalent amount.
So, Chair Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the LGA is a one-year cut, but the growth forever goes into the City of Minneapolis, or is it a one-year growth kick into the City of Minneapolis General Fund?
If you look at the spreadsheet, Representative Lencheski, all of those related three items on lines 12, 13, and 14 are all one-year provisions in the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Schill can help out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, that's correct. The lines 12, 13, and 14 fully reflect what's going on here. To reach the 5.8, you need to eliminate the transfer for 2 years, but the reduction in LGA is listed only for pay 16, which is an impact of fiscal 17. And that's why you see zero in fiscal 16 as an impact to the LGA, but the full 5.864 impact in fiscal 17. So there's 2 years anticipation of not doing a transfer, and then the reduction in LGA takes place in fiscal 17.
Thank you, Michelle. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to remember who was the author of the Vikings bill in the House. Was it Representative Lanning?
Representative Lanning.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so he's not here to ask him. But just trying to think this through. And, you know, Mr. Chair, I think you and I were strong opponents of public subsidy for the Viking Stadium. So that's not really what I'm trying to get at here. This isn't about how you feel about the Viking Stadium, but that, because that deal is done. And you know, the way I understood that, and I, you know, Representative Lanning, I guess, is the guy who could tell us, but the way I understood that was, you know, that was the package that did the funding for everything to happen for both the stadium construction, its operations, and the sports facility, their staff, their expenses, their reserves. And so what I'm trying to figure out is who's asking for this? Is there... I didn't get any sense that Minneapolis was asking to have this, because the way I understand it, Minneapolis has no difference in money. It just
comes from the sports facility, and then they lose their LGA, so they're still neutral, you know, as far as a funding stream. They don't get any money from this kind of a provision, but they do potentially have a risk that a large facility in their community would not be adequately funded for things that you have capital reserves for. So if something goes wrong, you know, I would hope that. But if you could just tell me, Mr. Chair, rather than, you know, offering my amendments on this, you know, where is this coming from? What's the reason for this piece of legislation? Or non-piece of legislation that was just added?
The reason, Chair Lencheski, is to provide the budget cuts we need in taxes in order to meet our target. And this is one of the items that we have included.
So, Mr. Chair, so you're saving in total
we're saving
on the spreadsheet.
So we are saving $5.8 million in LGA. That LGA then is being replaced to the city of Minneapolis by allowing them to keep that sales tax in the same amount, so it doesn't affect Minneapolis. They still get the $5.86 million. The Metropolitan Sports Facility Authority does not receive the $5.8 million that they're receiving now. That's what I understand.
Okay, so again, you know, I think if I had been a proponent of, Mr. Chair, of the Viking Stadium, I would be, you know, a little bit upset about this, because that's kind of how, you know, that was part of the funding mechanism for the whole shebang. But what I'm not understanding is the residents of Minneapolis and the people who visit Minneapolis, they're still paying the same in taxes, though. It's just a way to get more money for you and your budget. I mean, there's no cut to the consumer who's buying toothpaste, right? I'm just trying to understand it. It's really the cut in the spending. It's not a tax cut.
It's a cut in the spending, correct.
Okay.
Now maybe Ms. Templin can tell us a little more of the history of the landing bill, and is she here?
And maybe, Mr. Chair, while she's coming up, I mean, so it's really just a shift in the money on the state spreadsheet, but the taxes for the consumer, person who's purchasing things, there's no tax cut.
That's what I understand. Ms. Templin, thank you.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. The transfer that is being discussed, it's local city taxes that Ms. Dalton stated. It is an amount, it is the growth in local taxes over the base year 2011. And that additional amount is stated under current law that it's for the benefit of the MSFA. This amount is forecasted by MMB each year. And for the 16 and 17 biennium, there's $6.3 billion additional is growth in local sales tax revenue that was projected to go to the MSFA under current law. Those revenues aren't used for any stadium. Well, they aren't used. They're used for the benefit of the MSFA. We don't know how they're used. So, but we do know that they're not used for debt service. And those obligations are already accounted for under current law.
So we, this is taken from the MSFA slush fund, Bill Lencheski.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, so thank you for that. Just trying to understand a little bit more.
Thank you, Ms. Templin.
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, you know, I'm trying to think of all these big deals that get done around here, and, you know, some people vote for them, but some and some don't. But I'm trying to think of times when we've taken a local option sales tax that's set up for something. We have them all over. We have a bunch in this bill for Mankato and, I don't know, Sartell and all kinds of people. Are there times in the past that you can think of when we have taken that local option sales tax, because it grew, and they almost always do, except in a recession, and diverted the money off to another location that wasn't contemplated in the bill? In this case, it would be the city of Minneapolis, but...
Well, Representative Lencheski, the Greg Davids good neighbor policy...
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that was... Did he do that after the fact when he was chair? Or was that the enabling legislation?
I think he started it in 11 and 12, and then there contemplated refinements to it last time when you were chair, and that's all I remember. But that would be an example.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe Ms. Dalton can tell us if that was after the enabling legislation or if it was the full package.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, actually, I think the closest I can think of is actually the fact that we've allowed the city of Rochester, and we did do it legislatively, to divert some of its existing sales taxes to pay for the DMC.
So, Mr.
Yeah,
Chair.
And Representative Lencheski, some of that's in the bill. Ms. Right. Norton's piece allows some of that. So Representative Norton's piece allows
and
some of that.
And so, Mr. Chair, I can actually think of other attempts, and I can think of other times it's happened, but it's always been because the city came and asked for it, or the community as a group came and asked for it. And I, you know, I'll just be honest, rather than going through the amendment strategy, it's where you and I share, you know, the same view of stadium subsidies. This just feels to me like it's more a political move to, I don't know, take a shot at the sports facilities authority, and I'm not accusing you of that, but I'm not understanding in a $2 billion surplus why this gimmick, really, because it's just a shift, it's a gimmick in the budget, and I thought we were trying to get away from those, is here. You know, I think if it's not intentionally to sort of make a political point, like, you know, when you use the term, Mr. Chair, slush fund, you know, I think it's going to be perceived that way by folks, whether it's intended that way or not. And, you know, I certainly can't speak for the governor, and I can't speak for the sports authority, but it doesn't seem like a bill could pass with a provision like this. And I certainly heard, you know, the at least from Chair Davids, and I guess you really haven't said this much, Chair Drazkowski, to your credit, but Chair Davids has said repeatedly, I want a bill that the governor can sign. And that's why he won't repeal the taxes that we, when we raised the fourth tier in the cigarette tax, that's been his answer, because he doesn't think the governor would sign that. Yet, I'm on one provision of many that I think make, you know, sure that the governor can't sign a bill like this. But, you know, maybe you can tell me where I'm wrong on that. But, I know that the governor, when I was looking, and I don't know who all the people are on the sports authority, but I know when the governor was appointing, you know, the group, you know, he could have just picked any people, but he was very bipartisan in who he has appointed. And I know that there's one person I do know is Dwayne Benson. He's a former Republican senator. He was the minority leader here for a while before I was here. And there's another person whose name is like Griffin or Griffith or whatever. But my point is, he appointed Republicans and Democrats. This is a bipartisan group of people who are charged with making sure everything happens as it should be there. And so it feels to me like I've read some newspaper articles about, you know, I think all of us who've been here a little bit know Michelle Kelm-Helgen. She's been a great public servant in Minnesota and has done a lot of work for many of us, whether when she was with the Minnesota Senate, with the governor's office, and now is bringing this project in, you know, below budget, earlier, you know, earlier than on time. And so, you know, I just, maybe for the record, you know, wanted to know if what you're trying to do is, you know, take a little shot at the governor, Ms. Kelm-Helgen, or, you know, it just seems like a little bit of theatrics and not really genuine, and doesn't seem like it could get signed, but, you know, I'm...
Lencheski, again, I don't think we should question the motives of people here, and I don't think that's what you intend to do, but we're talking about the content of the bill. And go back to one of your questions. It seems to me now, as we analyze this, that law currently does that diversion, if you will, of local option sales tax from a community, and that's what the law is doing now. I think it can argue very strongly that this corrects and removes that diversion and actually puts it back to the community that tax was passed in. That's how I see it from what I've heard. But Representative Lencheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're right. I mean, I'm really trying to walk that fine line and not questioning motives. I'm just being honest with you, and having worked with the party opposite governor in the past in the same role you're taking, is, you know, governors often feel like when they read bills that certain things, I mean, I guess maybe I've said enough. I think that this is a red flag for this bill, as I think a number of these provisions are, in that it feels like we're just going to defund the sports facility authority. And again, I didn't support the project either. But if it's just about getting the taxes back to the people paying for it, you know, there's a whole bunch of state taxes in there too, and I'd never heard Minneapolis come and ask for this provision. And I guess I would ask you if you worked with Ms. Kelm Helgen and Mr. Mondale and the governor, or you know, anybody with the sports facilities authority in coming up with this legislation.
I have not talked to them about this, that's what you're asking. But it seems to me that that this makes fiscal sense, certainly for the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. If we have these dollars building up in this account for the sports facilities authority that don't have an immediate purpose, understood purpose, slush fund would be a fair term.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, again, I mean, I'm trying to actually save time on this by not doing amendments, which would take significantly longer. So if Mr. or Ms. Dalton or Mr. Michael can remind me, as the enabling Vikings legislation came into place, the reserve component of the sales tax, how does that mechanism work? Is there a cap, and is there a year, an end date? And is it tied to the bonds?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lenchesky. Mr. Michael might want to weigh in on this. I have to admit, I don't have the whole Vikings language sitting in front of me, and it is somewhat complex, so I don't want to misspeak about what is or is not in that. But there is actually a limit on the reserve fund. The original limit had not been written very carefully. It had not been written very tightly. And actually, I believe this year after the initial language passed, we did some corrections to that to tighten up the reserve so that the bonds would be paid off faster and that the tax would retire sooner.
So, Mr. Chair, I think we might be on the Twin Stadium now. we have this soccer amendment here. It's amazing people can even recall some of this stuff. But I do think, my understanding as I recall it, but again, I wasn't on the inner circle of putting the thing together, and I know you weren't, Chair Graskowski, because, you know, we were all fighting it, but I don't think there was a connection to the bonds, and whether there's a cap or not, you know, I think those could be questions for a future time, but I do think this package ensured that the Sports Facilities Authority could function, and I've never heard anyone make the argument that they shouldn't be there. I mean, someone has to run that place, and they are governor appointees, and I heard in another committee that some of those people's salaries are being defunded or something like that. That could be not true. I just heard that in the hallway. Might not be accurate, and that's why I think there's a potential for this to seem personal, you know, if people are just, and this bill doesn't do that, but that if people are like defunding people who are on that organization, you know, I think people should think about what that means. So, you know, Mr. Chair, I do think that there's always room for people to improve on these projects, but I'm not understanding how this one does that. And so, because there was never a bill, and because, as you just stated, the governor and his staff and Ms. Kelm Helgen and the rest of the authority, both Republicans and Democrats, didn't have input to this, you know, I really hope, again, I'm not doing an amendment, I hope you consider either before we take this vote or before we mark up the omnibus tax bill, kind of a relook or potentially a removal of this, because within the state budget, it's just a shift. It's just a gimmick, and I know it's getting you some money in your target to do some things here, but I think I've said enough.
I think
just want to get it out there.
Thank you, Representative Lenchesky. And I mean, this is, Ms. Dalton, again, this is the overage in collection, right? And we're not We're not at all impacting the budget of the Metropolitan Sports Facility Authority. This is money that's collecting there that they don't have a purpose for. I don't know where the problem is, but Ms. Dalton, remind us about the overage part of this again, as I understand it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this actually relates to, there has to be growth above 2% a year plus a flat amount before any money actually goes into this transfer. My understanding is nobody expected this transfer to be quite this big this already. Partially it's because the city sales tax revenues have been growing a little bit faster than anticipated.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. President Lynch.
Mr. Chair, just as you go forward thinking about it, I mean, again, I do think this is, you know, problematic for getting a bill signed, but you know, there's a long time left. I think there's 4.5 weeks, so hearts and minds change. But I think generally when we've seen on, you know, so let's take DMC. You know, we've kind of got the same stuff going on. I mean, we could open that project back up. You know, Representative Norton's bill really isn't doing that. So I don't think that's quite the same parallel. She's not, you know, deconstructing any part of the financing that was put in place. But I do think for the future, if you feel that that's any of the levers in the Viking Stadium financing, I mean, we saw the electronic pull tabs, you know, from that.
Well, then how are they doing?
I think they're doing how you and I thought they were doing. What are you doing? But anyway, or electric bingo or whatever it was called. I think when you think about this, it seems to me, you know, we have growth in sales taxes in the 22 or 25 or whatever communities that have local option sales taxes, including some counties like Hennepin County. And generally, we have language that says, you know, if that is happening, then it goes to defease bonds, not to defund the organization that's, you know, running the show. So I hope you think about that. I think that's, you know, the difference. That may not sound like a distinction, but I think it is a significant distinction for this provision, and I just hope you think about taking another look. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's continue the discussion. Thank you, Representative Lynchewski.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, in this, I've been following the conversation that you and Representative Lynchewski have had, and I, too, was not a supporter of the Viking Stadium. My city would have preferred that I was, but I wasn't. And the further we get from that vote, the happier I am that I voted no. I think my constituents, I can assure you, the overwhelming percentage of them are glad that I represented them properly and fully on that vote, and they...
That's why you get 84% representative.
87. I wasn't going to bring it up. but since you did, you know how important it is to me that the record be accurate. because you wouldn't want me reading the voter roll.
I think you represent David Z to have a discussion.
we had a pleasant discussion this morning back in the retiring room.
Oh, good. Good.
About the Buena Vista email that we all got. Yeah. That's not something that we need to dwell on here. I do think there were some opportunities lost in the Vikings Stadium bill, and I think principally we've still got ongoing issues, and we may be exacerbating them with Dr. McGuire's proposal for a soccer stadium, that we have all of these different public entities, or actually the soccer stadium proposal is for a private entity, but we've got the Target Center in downtown Minneapolis, we've got the Vikings Stadium, we've got Target Field in all those in Minneapolis, we've got the Excel Center here in St. Paul, all of which were constructed or are now being paid for with public funds. The Target Center, of course, was privately constructed, but then purchased by the city of Minneapolis to retain the Timberwolves here at a time when that was threatened, and Harv and Marv, as they were known, were threatening to leave town. But we've got all these different facilities that are paid for publicly, but each of them is paid for differently They're structured differently. The tax is different. They each have separate governance structures. And I've made arguments before that part of the problem then for the public is that we end up paying probably more than we should because they actually compete against each other. That if you're a music promoter and you want to bring, who's that big band of old guys that's coming to town? Rolling Stones.
70-year-old crowd.
If you want to bring the Rolling Stones to town, you shop who your venue is going to be, and you pit these different venues against each other. You know, it's not unlike the lead up to the Great Recession, where banks were shopping for who their regulatory body would be. And the regulatory bodies that were the easiest on the banks were the ones that tended to get the oversight, because the banks could then go out and sell the subprime mortgages that blew up on people, and they could make imprudent moves, and they ran with it, and we all paid. We all paid figuratively, also all paid literally for the actions of the banks there. But we're not coordinating these, and I'm not a fan of that. I think it was a missed opportunity in the Vikings bill. I'm not a fan of how we structured the financing of the Vikings Stadium, or what it looks like. I'm not convinced it's not going to be just a big, ugly monstrosity in the Minneapolis skyline. But when you don't vote for the bill, you don't get much say in what the bill says. But you did refer to the overage on this sales tax. And I guess my question for Ms. Dalton is there a cap as to how much this sales tax is allowed to take in each year? Because overage to me means there's a cap, and then your cup runneth over. And I don't recall there being a cap. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, no, of course there is not a cap on this. I think when we're talking overage, we're talking, there was, if you actually look in the amendment and you go to page 67, section 8, it basically talks about how this retained money is allocated. And the first four clauses relate to paying the debt, providing a capital improvement reserve appropriation, providing for the operating expense appropriation for the Minnesota Sports Facility Commission, repaying the state for advances on those capital improvement and operating expenses prior to this kicking in. And then if you get to page 68, line 20, this is what Representative Drazkowski was referring to as the overages. If there is money that isn't needed for those things, then any other growth in the sales tax revenue is divided between the city and the Sports Facility Commission based on the formula that is in that clause 5. And as I said, the sales tax has been growing a little faster than had been originally anticipated at the time that this was all worked out. I'm not sure exactly how much, or if Ms. Templin might have any information on that, but that's where the $6.85 million is in this, when we split money, you know, because it's not needed for these other things. And that's what's being a portion of that is being removed in this bill, being given to the city for general fund purposes, and then the city's aid is being offset to equal it.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Dalton, do I understand that this is a prioritized list, that Clause 1 gets paid first, Clause 2 second, Clause 3 third, and that sort of thing?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, that is my understanding, and as I said, I believe everybody anticipated no problems with paying 1 through 4, and 5 was a... And what happens if we have more than what we need to pay for 1 through 4?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Dalton, this is a local option sales tax. Was approved by the city of Minneapolis, the city council. I forget the local government aid formula. You might like to, but I'm sure you're not able to. Can you remind me, do we consider local option sales taxes as a factor in determining local government aid?
Ms. Dolan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, no, we do not.
Representative Dabney.
So, Mr. Chair, it appears to me that this provision, let me put it in the form of a question to you. Do you anticipate, maybe when the division report moves to full taxes, a proposal to reduce all cities' local government aid by some percentage of local option sales taxes in those 22 communities, 25 communities, whatever it may be, that have local option sales taxes in the state?
Representative Dabney, I don't expect that, but again, this is actually sending the local option sales tax back to your city, and as I understand, it doesn't change any of the commitments that are in law for the Sports Facility Authority, those on pages 67 and 68 that Ms. Dalton just reviewed. As a matter of fact, this is only a one biennium piece to the budget, and I'm told that it may be as much as $11 million going to this in the next biennium that will go back to the Sports Facility Authority again. So I think this is going to be a question probably that future legislatures are going to grapple with too as they look at what some of us in some venues are going to call a slush fund building up to the Sports Facility Authority. But again, this is Minneapolis's money, and this is just returning that money to them and then offsetting their LGA accordingly.
Mr. Chair, I guess the concern is that, well, I mean, this is another threat to local government aid across the state. If we start offsetting local government aid payments with local option sales tax payments, and particularly, again, if we don't go back to the formula. If we don't do the real work of rolling up our sleeves, sitting down with other people from across the state, working bipartisanly to get to a formula that if you wanted to include local option sales taxes, I imagine you'd get some pushback. But, you know, asking that question and doing the real work, statistical analysis, excuse me, to get us there, you know, it's all of these are legitimate questions to ask. I don't object to their being asked. I think what I'm having concern with is they weren't asked. Instead of saying, well, you know, how would this work and how do we factor local option sales taxes into local government aid formulas and things like that, it's a reduction in local government aid, and then a slush fund, a shift over, you know, another shift when, I know the last biennium under Chair Lincheski, we really worked to get shifts out of the state budget, and this puts another shift in, you know, not doing the work. I'm wondering if Ms. Templin can come back to the table, because I do have a question for her.
Ms. Templin?
And Ms. Templin, first of all, earlier when you were at the table, you spoke in the sales tax generating billions of dollars, and I assume you meant millions, and it was the same sort of mistake we all do.
Ms. Templin, one of those factors, Representative Dabney, is the government gets too big, you forget how big it is. Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I may have done that. Yeah. I sometimes do that with my checkbook, too. And take care. At three zeros.
habits die hard, eh? So, yeah, just again, for the committee and the public, so that it was clear, we all do it, as you said. How much did this sales tax generate in 2013 and 2014?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, if you're referring to the...
You did that a minute ago, too.
He is looking a bit Republican.
Don't do that in your checkbook, either.
I do not have the annual allocations for the city of Minneapolis right before me, but I could get them.
All right.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, did I see something that former Representative Downey is looking to get a 70% salary increase in his current role as chair of the GOP?
Not sure what it has to do with the discussion, Representative Dabney. You might be correct.
The tax committee tradition is if someone mentions your name, you get to talk next, and I don't know where he is right now, but somebody did, just mention his name, so I thought we could at least... No, I understand it's a bit of a controversy in your party, given its financial challenges, shall we say, and he apparently is asking for a 70% pay increase, which is dramatic in anybody's world.
He doesn't work for the Sports Facility Authority. Representative Dabney.
Not currently. Thank you, Ms. Templin. I was just trying to get a handle on it. Is it fair to say that MMB, in putting together the Viking Stadium's bill, over-projected on electronic poll tabs and under-projected on local option sales taxes?
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney. The poll tab estimate by the Department of Revenue was done by the Department of Revenue, first of all, and not MMB.
That's right.
The projections for the city sales tax were done by the city.
Okay.
Carpenter, the CFO, was the one that supplied it.
Interesting.
For the analysis.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. That's interesting. I'd forgotten... I recognize the revenue was doing some of the projections rather than MMB. I'd forgotten if I'd even known that the city was the one who did the projections off the sales tax. That's interesting, given that the state, if I understand correctly, Ms. Dalton, collects the sales taxes and remits them, and they've got their fingers all over that data. So you would have thought that revenue or MMB would have made that calculation.
Hey, Representative Quam.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And while this has been an enthralling discussion that allows us a plethora of options of egresses to enter into a multitude of winding routes, I would like to go back to the point of the amendment. And if I recall correctly, Mr. Chair, there was in the last tax bill, or the one just previous to that, a portion, and I thought it was just to the cities of the first class, that allowed a portion of unutilized sales tax revenue to be reassigned to another area. Now, I believe that was maybe requested by St. Paul to be able to use some funds for a possible new stadium, which I think they're having an open house for that facility, I thought I saw. But when I looked at it, it was flexible enough to where, Rochester was seeking something to do with a convention center, and they possibly could have, under that language, move some money around. So when I've looked at that, this type of activity with excess sales taxes has been either proposed or implemented, in the past, with cities having some leeway. And again, I don't recall if it was specifically just first class cities or cities that had a sales tax in general. So I think on this topic, while this specific thing maybe hasn't been done, there have been instances of which it was allowed to move these funds around for flexibility, and I believe some cities that weren't specifically there asking for that power because they didn't want to make it sound too specific, we're allowed that power. Again, on the topic of the amendment, while we might debate the merits, I don't think we can honestly say that this type of thing is not unheard of.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Quam, I think you're missing a couple of key pieces. First of all, this provision is one of the many provisions in this bill that have never seen the light of day, did not have a public process to them, were not introduced as bills. The public was not allowed in on the development of this. It was not a transparent process. I find that disturbing, and I think you'll find that in sharp contrast to the provision that you're referring to in the tax bill 2 years ago. I think another significant difference is the chair has identified that not only was there not a public process to this, he never spoke to either the City of Minneapolis or the Sports Authority, Metropolitan Sports Facilities Authority, regarding this provision. In contrast, the City of St. Paul was fully engaged in work that they've done around the new CHS field, Saints Stadium, let's just call it that. Very different. There was a public accountable process. Elected officials as well as their staff were involved. The people who were going to be affected were allowed to know about it ahead of time and were agreeable to both the process and the product. Sharp contrast to this provision. Additionally, Mr. Chair, there was a study done a couple of years ago, and I don't recall whether it was the, and I don't want anybody to feel like they need to get up if I'm mistaken, but I don't remember if it was the Center for Fiscal Excellence, Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence, or someone else who actually talked about the importance of public entities having reserves. Because we all know the economy does this. I was on a roller coaster recently, which is unlike me. It did more than just this, trust me. It was a lot of this and then a little too much of that for my taste. But occasionally, the economy does that too. We saw in the Bush administration, the economy kind of went up a little bit, never very strong, and then came down really hard and really fast. Which illustrated the point that was being made about the value of reserves to public entities. Because it assures the public, first of all, that they can continue to deliver whatever services they do, and that they won't be coming back to the public for additional funds in the hardest times because they have something, some cushion to fall back on and mitigate the cuts they would have to make, allow them to still deliver the services that the public has asked them to deliver, and do so in a fiscally responsible way. So it's easy to talk about slush funds, but my wife and I are having a little conversation these days about the family budget. We're particularly looking forward to spending a remarkable amount of money on summer camps for the kids. Some great opportunities there, but they don't come cheap or free. We talk about our savings. We don't talk about having a slush fund. We talk about having savings. We talk about being intentional about that. We talk about being prudent. We talk about times when our salaries and incomes have been up and times when our salaries and incomes have been down and balancing those things off. We had a bill yesterday, Representative Wills had a bill yesterday up in full committee about 529 plans. We've got 529 plans on our kids, and we haven't always been able to contribute. Even when times were tough, for us personally, we had to step back from that. I'm not proud of that, but we've got some cushion now, and we're trying to build that up. That's prudent fiscal management, whether it's individuals or public entities, and I think this is one where we should certainly be prudent. And I'm a little concerned, while I'm no fan of the Sports Facilities Authority or the Viking Stadium bill, I do think we want them to be prudent, and I do think we want them to have reserves. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. I think we all agree on that. As a matter of fact, we're discussing this bill now and this amendment, and I mean, The Sports Facility Authority wants to come forward. They're certainly welcome to. They have been for the last 14 hours. This has been posted, and we're having that discussion, or as my old professor used to say, cuss and discuss. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Chair Drazkowski. Appreciate it very much. And, you know, I guess I started in the hopes it'd be quick. I don't know, maybe I should have stopped with the amendment, but I'll wrap it up on the whole issue. And you know, I think I've been trying to think about what doesn't seem right about this to me, because we share, you know, the view on stadiums, I think. But, you know, and I actually did, as Ms. Dalton was walking through, I came back after the Twins passed, and I was the person who carried the legislation that changed the sales tax for the Twins ballpark, and worked to ensure that over-collection, or whatever you want to call it, wasn't happening. But what I did is I worked, you know, after some difficult conversations with the county and the folks who are going to be in charge of that money, to get them to ultimately agree to the legislation, which at first they really didn't want, and it was around this issue of reserves. So, Chair Drazkowski, it's the same thing. But what I didn't go do is defund the ballpark authority. I didn't say, okay, so now we have the Twins Ballpark Authority, let's take their money away. What I did is limit that any excess growth in the financing that ultimately do defeat the tax, defeat the bonds, and therefore turn off the tax sooner than just allowing forever reserves to be built up. But there was no attempt to go say to the folks who are serving, you know, all of us, whether we're for the stadium or not, we are all benefiting from their service in getting that project going. They're, again, you know, coming in below budget and, you know, earlier than schedule. And so clearly I don't think anyone can find any critique that anything's going wrong there. So I think the better way is to go forward. I just suggest that maybe you consider not, you know, sort of, well, I won't say anything inflammatory, but, you know, I wouldn't try. I would think about how to get the taxes turned off rather than defund the Sports Facility Authority. But maybe that was your intent, is that you want them defunded. And so I wasn't doing that with the Ballpark Authority. And there's going to be a huge benefit to the people of Hennepin County after changing that legislation on the stadium, really important, making sure that the revenue streams end earlier. So I get that. I think I didn't get into the pieces of potentially offending folks and governor appointees, and you know, and so for the so with that, you know, I'll end on that. And Mr. Chair, if I may, I do have an amendment I do want to offer, unless there's someone else who wants to ahead of me. I have the 836. That's okay.
That'd be great.
Okay, so I have the 836, and I've thought about whether or not to offer this, and you know, I guess I'll ask for a roll call, and that is, you know, I taken seriously.
Representative Lencheski moves the 836 amendment. Roll call is noted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I taken seriously for a while, at least, this idea that, you know, we're trying to put together a tax bill as the majority that the governor can sign. But there's just too many provisions in the bill so far, even just in the division report, in my estimation, that I'm having a difficult time taking that seriously. So, and so I want to give the majority an opportunity to repeal the fourth tier income tax. This is the property tax division, Mr. Chair, and I know there's no germaneness anyhow in these committees, but this is germane because we have an income tax credit in this bill. It's the ag credit. Where you incent farmers to vote for more spending and then you give them an income tax credit. So there's certainly income tax provisions in this bill, and so this would allow all of you to your opportunity to repeal the fourth tier. We have the money in the state budget, and you were talking, Mr. Chair, about, you know, the amount of hours. We've talked about this division report. The amount of hours on the House floor on the fourth tier was significantly higher, just on that one provision. The freshmen who are here, you know, you never voted to, you never got to vote on a fourth tier income tax on the wealthiest Minnesotans, and in fact has paid back the school shift, removed the shifts and gimmicks in the budget, refilled our reserves in Minnesota. We now have the largest reserve in state history in our budget reserve and cash flow account. We built in a automatic filler into the reserve that's going to grow it even more, and I know your caucus likes that because you're proposing to increase the reserves in your budget resolution. But our fourth tier, along with a cigarette tax to help
pay for health care costs and some closing of some corporate loopholes really brought us to the situation we are here today, combined with the Minnesota economy, the Minnesota citizens, and Minnesota businesses. And so here we are. You know, we people, I think, often want to believe that when we made a decision to end a, you know, a decade of deficits and shifts and gimmicks, that we regret that move. I've heard that a number of times this year, that somehow people don't feel good about that fourth tier and on our side, and that isn't the case. You know, we've got the tax incidence report that came out to the tax committee. Over 90% of Minnesotans saw a tax cut as a result of our work, a tax cut. Less than the top 2% of Minnesotans saw a tax increase. There has not been a mass exodus. In fact, the economy is doing better than ever, and the amount of business starts are up. And there's really, it's really difficult to find, you know, that any of the arguments that were made on the House floor and in the tax committee really came to fruition. But yet, you know, they were made, and so this is an opportunity for everyone to get to vote to repeal the fourth tier income tax. This committee has the target, and if you would like to give a tax cut to the wealthiest 1.8% of Minnesotans, you're able to do it right here and now. And maybe Mr. Chair or others, you know, if you have input to me as to how you might be feeling about this. I mean, we tried to repeal the state CI tax in total, and we gave you that opportunity to do it all in 1 year, and that was voted down. And I'm wondering how people might feel about, I think you know how our side feels about that, because we did vote for that fourth tier, and we feel fine about that. The freshmen didn't on both sides, but the folks who are in the tax committee and in the now minority stand with that decision. I think it's been the right decision for Minnesota, and I'm just, you know, wondering thoughts on what people might feel about repealing the fourth tier for the wealthiest 1.8% of Minnesotans.
More discussion on the A36. Hearing none.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Ah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lencheski. I must say I'm a little concerned about your amendment. I think you made a good argument about the strength of the Minnesota economy post the institution of the fourth tier in particular. We were able to balance the budget, which had not been structurally balanced in a long time. We eliminated I don't know how many of the shifts and gimmicks that had been used. We paid back the schools. We'd been borrowing 40% of the money owed the schools. There are only two states in the nation that did that. California, long the poster child of fiscal irresponsibility, but under Governor Brown, far more fiscally responsible and moving in a very positive direction. They were only borrowing 18% from the schools. We were more than double what they were shifting from their schools. We paid them back. We reversed a lot of the shifts and gimmicks that were in the state budgets that had been building up over the years, making the budget easier for Minnesotans to understand and have a broader base to it. We were able to get to a position where 90% of Minnesotans paid less in taxes. Where people actually paid less in property taxes than they had the year before for the first time in over a dozen years, if I remember correctly. And the economy is strong. We're attracting people to Minnesota. Now, a lot of that, I will admit, is folks coming to the urban core. They like the lifestyle that the urban core is offering, both St. Paul and Minneapolis. Downtown Minneapolis, that used to be, you know, that central business district, dark and quiet at night, now is a thriving neighborhood with 30,000 people in it. Minneapolis Public Schools is looking to open a school to respond to the needs of constituents, because it's not just retiring baby boomers from the suburbs who are moving into the city to rent or to buy a condo, although there's plenty of that going on. It's young single people and young families who like what's going on. That's threatened by this bill. Ms. Kadoon was very clear about the importance of public safety and infrastructure to businesses, and if you start harming the business community, and that those quality of life and infrastructure and service issues, you do undermine the strength of the economy that you pointed out, Representative Chesky. But we did that in a fair and balanced way, and if you look forward in the projections that Minnesota Management and Budget uses in, or receives, I guess, in February and November of each year, what looks like a surplus when you start talking about, you know, just minimal inflation and population growth in the state, since we are a magnet, Minnesota is a magnet, we barely keep up. We barely keep up with the demands and the needs of our business community and taxpayers and the services they need to thrive. So I'm a little apprehensive. I know Representative Chesky on this amendment.
Representative,
and I know you have something to say. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure I had a roll call. Thank you. That's it.
Roll will be called on the A36 amendment.
Representative Hertas.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Dabney, for your characterization of how everything is wonderful in Minnesota. And I think things are getting better, but, you know, things in reality in the marketplace aren't like turning on a light switch. I mean, it just doesn't happen immediately. You know, a good analogy I might use, when I was a younger independent contractor, I needed water to a place. Short of a water truck, I found that I could get water from a neighbor, but it was more than 1,000 feet away. And so with the owner's consent, I was able to connect several hoses for a very long distance and got it all laid out, and I turned the water on. And I found that by the time I had walked to the other end of the 1,000 feet, the water still wasn't coming. And my analogy here is that we can all collectively, as a legislature, take credit for wanting to do good by Minnesota. But I think it's a mischaracterization to say that you know, policies put in place 2 years ago, or effectively we're still operating under your budget right now until June 30th, and we'll see the latent effects of what happens, because I don't think we have the data to really measure about the migration of adjusted gross income, whether it's leaving the state or not leaving the state. We know that prior to the fourth tier, imposition of the fourth tier income tax, adjusted gross income was leaving the state. I suspect that once Department of Revenue can actually provide us with data with the latent filing of tax returns, that maybe we might find some evidence one way or the other. So with that, I respectfully just suggest that, you know, we've all done things here to make Minnesota better, and I think a lot of the restraint that was exercised 4 years ago has provided an opportunity for Minnesota to grow. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Dabney.
Representative Hertas, I don't believe that the unwillingness to stand up to the needs of the state and the challenges is restraint. As I spoke yesterday in the Education Finance Committee, your side of the aisle has a fetish around tax cuts. And if you want, what the business community will tell you is, if you want a strong business environment, you need a strong workforce. You're right. That's not something that happened just in the last 2 years. That's been a long-standing situation in Minnesota. The strength of our workforce, the work ethic, the strength of our education system in developing that potential has been key to our success as a state. Education system that allows people and goods and services to get around. That you're currently, your party is unwilling to finance in a way that meets the ongoing future needs of Minnesota, as they were also unwilling in 2008 when we had to override Governor Pawlenty's veto because of his short-sighted leadership on transportation. It also requires a healthcare system that not only puts people to work, but allows sick and injured people to get well and get back to work, and for their families and friends to be able to work and not have to take time off of work and reduce their productivity to take care of them. It requires economic development strategies that are funded and thoughtful and put into place with key players in both the public and private sector, which your budget target cuts. in this proposes to cut in this biennium. It requires environmental activities that not only protect our environment so that we can all go on not only to live healthy lives and have great recreation, but so that businesses can function. One of the greatest threats to our business community right now in the Twin Cities is our historic unwillingness to deal with air pollution. And we are on the edge of the federal government mandating significant restrictions on growth of business because of the negative impact on air quality. If we don't deal with that, as in the 2000s, under your party's leadership, you've refused to, we will have significant problems for the business community as well as the rest of us. So I don't consider an unwillingness to stand up and do the adult work of taking on the hard challenges to be a matter of restraint. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hertas.
And I appreciate the response, but again, this is the ideologic difference between two parties and whether or not government's going to provide everything or play a limited role. And so that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertas. Clerk, I'll take over.
Oh, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt is wanting in on this.
Representative Marquardt, have at it.
No, and I'm not going to belabor the point, but I think it's more than the ideological differences, and I brought this up the other day. It's also when you say one thing and you do another, and that transcends party lines.
Right.
And we heard a lot about how this fourth tier, the sky was falling, the economy's going to go into the tank. It was something we absolutely should not have done. And then worse than that, what I heard time and time again was all the wasteful spending that came along with that. And I'm not going to go over it again, but you know, the budget resolution right here spends more, 600, even counting the tax cuts you have, still spends $600 million more than the previous budget. That's $500 more per family. When all I heard, you know, last year was all this wasteful spending. And when you talk migration, the fact of the matter is that I think there's another, I don't know what tier they took, but there's actually an increase in the number of filers in the top tier. I think it was by 6,200. Now, that doesn't say more people came in. Some, if that number had gone down, like they did in New Jersey when they tried to say there's an increase in tax, and the number that, like over 250, went way down, everyone said, see, all these people are exiting. When they looked at it closer, that wasn't the case. It was the fact that the recession hit, and just those people weren't making the money. So I'm not going to say, even though there were, I think it was like 6,000 more filers in the top bracket, I am not going to say more people came into the state. It might be that just people are doing better and more qualified up there. So I'm not saying that. But I think by all measures right now, there is no evidence to back, other than anecdotal, the fact that there's a migration loss. In fact, I think just looking at the numbers, we're doing very, very well. And you look at unemployment rate, you look at number of new jobs. And so, you know, here's a chance to put your, you know, actions where your words were. And so if this was so bad, and the spending that was done in the previous legislature was so bad, here's a way to indicate your preference for that.
Members, are we ready to vote? We're ready to vote. The clerk will take the roll on A36.
Chair Drazkowski?
No.
Vice Chair Quam?
Nah.
Representative Dabney?
Pass.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Hertas?
Pass.
Representative Kosnick. Representative Lanchesky.
Pass.
Representative Lean.
Pass.
Representative Marquardt.
Pass.
Representative Pinto.
Pass.
Representative Simonson.
Pass.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Whalen.
No.
Representative Joachim.
Pass.
Representative Dabney.
Pass.
Representative Hertas.
Pass.
Representative Lincheski.
Pass.
Representative Lean.
Pass.
Representative Marquardt.
Pass.
Representative Pinto.
Pass.
Representative Simonson.
Pass.
Representative Joachim.
Pass.
Supposed to call him three times.
Oh, one more. Representative Dabney.
Pass.
Representative Hertas.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski.
Pass.
Representative Lean.
Pass.
Representative Marquardt.
Pass.
Representative Pinto.
Pass.
Representative Simonson.
Pass.
Representative Joachim.
Pass.
Members, I'll have to say I've never seen a vote like this one. There being one in favor and six noes, the amendment is not adopted. All right, any other amendments, members, or discussion on the bill?
And I have to apologize that I'm waiting until today. As you know, as you might have noticed, I think I'm the only Democrat that hasn't offered an amendment yet. Kind of new to this, and I wanted to participate in the discussion and maybe not offer anything, but finally by today, there's a few things that were really starting to bother me. So I promise I'll try to be quick, but this first one we actually have seen, we're going to do that A31 amendment. Sorry about that. This one we've seen a portion of.
Representative Joachim moves A31 amendment.
Thank you, Chair. We've seen a portion of this already in the A22 amendment of Representative Lean's, and it didn't pass. It was to give seniors and disabled a little better access to the property tax rebate and the renter's credit, and it had a few other good things in there too. So since that broader amendment didn't pass, I thought I'd narrow it down. As you've heard, many people, I've heard this phrase tossed around the Capitol this year a lot, called the silver tsunami that's headed our way. And the aging population that we have, not just in the metro area, but even greater in greater Minnesota. And people are trying to age in place because it actually saves us all money when they age in place. And I would like to help our seniors age in place by giving them a little bit better property tax rebate and renter's credit. So what this does is it allows both spouses, and this was, I think, originally a Representative Isaacson's bill that we heard. It allows both spouses to be able to claim the deduction if they qualify for it. So they each be able to claim the $4,000 deduction. It takes it from, lessens the property tax credit that we're giving businesses, takes some of that money, just a tiny bit of that money, and gives it back to our seniors and disabled. So hopefully you all have the A22 amendment right now and can look at it. And
A31.
A22 was the old one that was broader. A31 is the narrow one. I hope you all have it. You can look at it, and I'd ask for a roll call vote.
Okay, roll call is noted. Discussion on the A31. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Representative Joaquin for bringing this forward, and I remember Representative Isaacson presenting it, and I think this is great. I've had a lot of focus on early learning and development, our younger citizens, but I know that there's this massive concern as our population becomes older. And I think we all heard about this at the that first day at the Humphrey program, bringing all of us together that day in January, I forget the name of it, but anyway, I was struck, as I think other members were as well, by this, as Representative Joachim referenced, this silver tsunami and this huge jump in that population. Elderly folks especially feel the bite of property taxes, as we've discussed. They are not, there may not be liquidity in somebody's home to be able to to pay these, and it's a special particular concern for folks who are older. And unlike some of the other provisions of the bill, this is one that that we did in fact hear some testimony on, and I think it's terrific, and I'm grateful to Representative Joaquin for bringing it forward. Thank you. Thank
more
you,
discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. More discussion. A31. Seeing none, all in favor of the A31 amendment.
Was it a
roll call?
I think she has to roll call, Mr. Chair.
The clerk will call the roll on A31.
Chair Druskowski?
No.
Vice Chair Quam?
Aye.
Representative Dabney?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Erickson? Representative Hertas?
No.
Representative Koznick?
No.
Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Representative Lean?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Pinto?
Yes.
Representative Simonson?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Whalen?
No.
Representative Joaquim?
Yes.
Vote being 7 ayes and 8 noes, the amendment, the A31, is not adopted.
Mr. Chair, I have another one.
Representative Joaquin moves the A44 amendment.
Thank you. First, I'm just a little disappointed that the A31 didn't pass. It really isn't that much money, but this next one, we had a little bit of discussion about this Wednesday night just as we bumped up against the midnight deadline, and I was going to leave it at that, but my conscience has been bugging me for a few days now. Having most recently served on a city council, you know, and I have to apologize, Chair, it is looking at your reverse referendum on the general operating levy. The rest of the reverse referendums, I actually kind of agree with you on the capital levy, but the general operating levy, this is something our local city councils are tasked to do. This is their main job, is to levy and provide services for their cities, to provide parks, plows, sewers, water, police, fire, elections, facilities. As you heard from some of the testimony from the first-class cities, and I know this for a fact, that at least 50% of every city's budget is usually public safety. So they're out there every day providing services to our citizens. They are the most accountable to their citizens. I can tell you, I was stopped. I had to add about 15 minutes on to any errand I did in town. And we're a small 2x2 mile town in Hopkins. To any errand I did, because we'd stop and I'd chat. And I'd hear from people and what they thought. And they are really directly accountable. They're the most directly accountable to what the services their citizens need every single day. And we ask a lot of trust of our voters when we get elected up here. We ask them to trust us to have their best interests at heart. And the reason I'm finally bringing this up is because I can't go back to my city council with the way this bill reads right now. I can't go back to them and look them in the eye and say, you know what, I want you to trust me to do my job that you elected me to do, but I'm not going to trust you to do yours. I don't trust you and the people that elected you to do your main purpose, which is operating the city every single day and finding a way to fund that services that people in our city, in your city, in everyone's city have come to expect and who frankly deserve those services. So I would like to move the A44 amendment that deletes just the portion of the reverse referendum on the general operating levy for cities, because I trust our local governments who are elected to do their job. And you know what? If they do it poorly, they're not going to be elected for very long, just like the rest of us up here, too. So I hope you would join me. I have to say it's been quite an adjustment coming from local government up here, even though I had been staff up here for a while, because when I would talk to people about local government, I used to make a little joke about it being the one bastion of sanity that still functions nonpartisanly. And I truly do believe that, but I'd like to have a glimmer of hope up here of some bipartisanship, too. And bipartisanship, when we look back at our city councils and go back, I know you all go back to their meetings and you do your annual updates, to be able to go back to them and say, you know what, you trust me to do my job, I'll trust you to do yours. So, thank you.
Thank you. Discussion on A44.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Joaquin, this is just a tool. And if units of government educate their populace, there'll never be any of these votes. So it's a tool to have available to empower people if, you know, the unit of government does not educate its populace. So we should not frown on this. This is a part of government by, for, and of the people.
More discussion on the A44.
Mr. Chair? Just, I'm glad Representative Erickson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad Representative Erickson brought that up because I had a little note for myself to add this too, and I get nervous, so I just skipped over it. I understand you say that this is a tool, but I think it's a tool we don't need because we have elections that are tools to take care of this. And what really bothers me about this section is the threshold, and we talked about the threshold Wednesday night too, about 10%. And I looked back to all the way to the 2005 elections in Hopkins, what's on our website, and the lowest amount of voters, now Hopkins is a little over 17,000 people, just to let you know. I know 2 by 2 miles, 17,000 people, we're a little dense, a lot of 57% rental. The highest amount of voters was 2,186. And that was in 2005. It was the first year I ran. I door-knocked the whole city. I like to think I brought people out to the polls and encouraged them to vote. The last election cycle was super disappointing. The lowest election cycle, sorry. Last election cycle, 2013, we have about 1,674. 2009 was our worst, the most disappointing I've had as an elected official to see the apathy. We only had 861. So if you take the 10% on that top number, 2186, that's 218, we'll round up, 219 people. Well, like I said before, we have a 57% rental, and I know you say it's an effort for people to go out and get those signatures, but not in Hopkins. You see, our residential streets, most of them are houses, and my lot's like this, 50 feet apart. It's great to door knock, guys. Nice gridded pattern, 50 feet wide lots. Otherwise, you go into one apartment. We have apartment buildings that are 150 units or plus. You don't even have to stand out in the rain. You could just go door to door and get some signatures. We have a condo association that's over 300 units in buildings of, let's see, the 4 on top and 4 on the bottom. So you could do some stairs, get some workouts, get some mileage on your Fitbit. It's not that tough to get those signatures. And I think what this creates is a super minority of constituents that just are upset about paying taxes. And we all know they're out there. They don't see the link sometimes. And maybe it's the fault of ourselves of not explaining to people this is what you're getting for what you're paying for. And that's a big phrase in our house because it's a constant disagreement between my husband and I, who always tries to lowball things, and I keep trying to remind him that you get what you pay for, and then when something goes wrong, I bite my tongue and try not to tell him you got what you paid for. But it is a responsibility of the local government to explain to their constituents, this is what you're getting for what you're paying for. But there will always be that super minority, no matter what, who's going to want something for free or think it's overpriced. We've had some street projects, and I know way more about pavement management systems than I ever thought I would, and about sewer and water. And it's amazing. You'll have a road that's over 60 to 70 years old, and you're going in to finally having to do a total reconstruct because it's collapsed to the point underneath in the sewer and water that you have to. And you will get people coming in upset about the assessment, but we cap them so they don't have to pay as much, and we walk them through the process, and they're like, you know what? I'm sick of hitting all those bumps. I'm sick of water pooling in front of my house. You're right. Road needs to be done. I'll send my check in. Some of them will send them in early so they don't have to pay the interest. But there's always one or two people on that road. Their car could go through a hole in the road, and they would still not think it should be fixed because they don't want to pay for it. So I don't think a super minority of a city should be able to decide over 90% of the other city that duly elected these people to do the services and do their job. So that's my little pitch, and I know Representative Dampney, I think, wanted to jump in. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
You know, Mr. Chair, throughout your bill, kind of embedded in it, and certainly in this reverse referendum provision, is this idea that, that taxes are bad and that people don't want to pay them. I don't always find that to be the case. I'm trying to remember who it was who said taxes are the price you pay for civilization. Now, Representative Joachim is correct. There's a lot of people who want something for nothing. They want the roads, they want the education, they want the police, they want the fire. They just don't want to have to pay for it. I mislaid it, but somewhere I came across a cartoon, and it's a picture of a guy standing at his front door, and you can see the flames coming out of the windows. The house is on fire, and the fire department is running up with the hoses, and he's standing at the front door. Representative Simonson, you'll appreciate this. He stands at the door and says, "Stop, I'm a libertarian." Because, of course, he wouldn't want to call on the public to help him protect his home. People want stuff for nothing. But not everybody. Some people are able to see the value that they get from the taxes they pay. As the Bush economy started to crater a number of years ago now, rapidly, my school district was going out for a operating referendum. And it's already a challenge in Minneapolis because, I forget the exact numbers, but something like over 80% of the households in Minneapolis don't have kids in them. Yeah, there's a lot of that growth that we're seeing in the downtown area are single people who are childless. We've got a lot of seniors in the community who no longer have kids in school, if they ever did. We've got that influx of the baby boomers who are empty nesters from the suburbs who are coming in to the city to live. I represent part of the, I forget what color we call it now, blue line? The Hiawatha line. They never should have changed it. Not because I can't remember, but for other reasons that I won't go into. But they're coming into the city to live along the light rail line because they like the convenience, they like the lifestyle, they appreciate the mass transit and being up close with their neighbors. But they don't have kids with them. And so as the Bush economy was cratering, and my school district was looking seriously at going out for an operating referendum, the school district stepped back for a minute and thought, and doubled down. They increased the ask for the operating referendum because they saw they needed it. And we benefited from it. And over 70% of the voters that next election voted for it. And the folks who were working the referendum campaign talked about being on the phones through that summer as companies were closing, as foreclosures were rising rapidly, as people were being laid off, as the economy is crumbling around them. The volunteers on the phones heard people saying, you know, times are going to be tough, but at least I can help look out for the kids in the community. I'm willing to suck it up. So as things were getting to the worst we'd seen since the Great Depression, lots of people without kids in the schools in Minneapolis voted to raise their property taxes. Just this last fall, the city of Minneapolis, which had cut its property tax levy the year before, was looking at a slight increase in a property tax levy about inflation. And a thin majority of the council, there's 13 members on the Minneapolis City Council, and if I remember correctly, it was a 7-6 vote. They decided to cut some of the spending in the proposed budget and trim the levy. And they had their final vote to mark up, or final meeting to mark up the budget, and people turned out, standing room only, packed house, to demand a higher property tax levy and a bigger city budget, because they saw the value in the services that the majority had proposed to cut, and they wanted to see those services, and they were willing to pay for them. And they would. We've got a little higher levy than what they went in with, and a little larger government spending in Minneapolis, because that's what the voters wanted. So, you know, Representative Hume, not only should we trust the local elected officials, it's odd how we all wax on about how we trust them, and then we get in here and suddenly we don't trust them anymore. But we should also respect elections. You know, people come out in whatever numbers they do, and they vote, and they make a decision. You know, it's kind of like here. You offer your amendment. Here's my amendment. You argue. You debate back and forth a little bit. Representative Lumchesky offered to repeal the fourth tier. Majority of the members on your side said no. That question is done. The vote was taken. We move on. Elections are the same way. First Tuesday after the first Monday in November, there's the election. You vote Marquardt or you vote whomever. You vote Daphne or, well, whatever. And you brought it up. And you move on with the decision. The decision has consequences. And this is an attempt to say, you know, it's like Major League Baseball. We're going to do a replay. We're going to let the guys in New York with the video cameras check the outcome and the consequences of the last election. I don't think that's helpful. I think it sends the wrong message to Minnesotans about the value of their vote. Because you know what? You can show up on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, vote, and then have somebody come back and try to undo the consequences of your vote. A small minority, 10%. It doesn't even have to be people who voted. It can be people who stayed home, didn't participate in the election, and now they come along and try to undo the consequences for those of us who did show up and vote. I think it's the wrong direction, and Representative Yukim, I appreciate your bringing forward the amendment, and I hope bipartisanly we'll decide greater Minnesota, suburban Minnesota, urban Minnesota. We not only trust the local elected officials, but we trust the voters who elected them. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
More discussion on A44.
Yes.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. We've had a lot of amendments and a lot of time here, so maybe my memory is incorrect, but I thought your side offered the amendment to lower this threshold down to 1%, and if that was in good faith, I really find this amendment hard to understand, in that if you talk about shouldn't be doing this, it's bad, and yet I think the amendment was 8-7. Most of them have been, and just wondering the contradiction here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I believe they withdrew that amendment as well. Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my amendment, yes. And I cited it wasn't in good faith. I was trying to make a point, and I withdrew it, and that is points that are being made now. But I should just also add, in saving time, I have two more amendments on this, but I want to offer them. But one is to have a reverse referendum on legislators' elections. So just do that. You know, after people get voted in office, we can just let people have reverse referendums at 10% if they think that's a good idea, and they can put it on the ballot again. But I won't offer that one, although if somebody else would like it, I have it. You can do it and we'll happily vote on it. And then I have another one that I wasn't going to offer that says, you know, maybe I should offer that. It just depends. But that one says, let's have reverse referendum on the state. And, you know, I've seen these attempts many times on reverse referendum here, and it's always so great to do the locals but not to ourselves. So we could just do this for the state budget and the state, you know, the whole budget. So the way that would work is, you know, the voters, if 10% of Minnesotans don't like the state budget, you can put the whole budget on the ballot and Minnesota can vote on it. So if it's good for the city council members and the locally elected officials, then it should work for us too. So I have that amendment, and if reverse referendum works for the locals, we should probably apply it to ourselves.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to put some numbers on this super minority idea, responding to Representative Erickson. So if you have a town of 500 people and assume 50% turnout, which is sort of general election turnout, that's 250 people. 10% of that is 25 people. So whatever the town does in terms of educating people, once you got those 25 people saying we want to redo the election, that's that. And that's even assuming 50% turnout. I often with local elections, other general elections, if we assume a 10% turnout, or let's even assume a 20% turnout, that's 100 people. 10% of that is 10 people. Point is, you get 10 people, you have a good dinner party, and now suddenly you're having all the expenses and redoing an election again. So let's just want to make sure we're very clear about the numbers here. The super minority is a super, super, super minority. It's just not that many people. Thank you.
More discussion on the A44.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank the representatives for the discussion. And Representative Anderson, if Representative Lincheski wouldn't have withdrawn that, I would have been voting no, because I do feel that strongly about this. And like I said, I haven't offered any amendments yet, but it really has been thinking long and hard about this for a few days, actually, since the bill was originally presented in taxes, property taxes. I just can't, good conscience, go back to my council. And I know it will have a philosophical difference on whether or not you think this is a tool. I don't think, the only thing I think this is a tool for is instability in budget cycles for cities. It doesn't even take into account inflation. It could be $1 more than the last levy and trigger a reverse referendum if a super minority came forward and said, I just don't want to pay taxes. And that instability does not do any city any good. It doesn't do taxpayers any good trying to figure out what they're going to end up paying. It doesn't help taxpayers. Like I had said before, I think it was on Wednesday, all the days are blurring together, and I'm sure it's just going to get worse. But so when our city, when Hopkins, and I should I really need to start mentioning St. Louis Park Tour. They're going to start getting really upset with me. But City Council in Hopkins is where I had my start. When we finally put some stability back in our budget, was able to put a financial management plan together that looked out at 20 years and took everything into account, our city, our debt services, our TIF districts, our budgets, our facilities, and everything, we were able to raise our credit rating to a double A-plus for our tiny little town, which ended up lowering costs for all of our citizens when we went to bond for projects. We saw that at the state level when they reduced the state bond rating because there was so much instability in our budget cycles. So I think this is going to have long-lasting effects, because it really will create this instability. Cities are going to be, I wouldn't be surprised if a few of them have their bond ratings reduced because of the instability that this could cause. So I really want you to think of your council members when you vote on this and the message that you're sending to them, because it really truly is a message. Even if you just think it's a tool, it's a message. So thank you.
More discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the A44, signify by saying aye.
I had asked for a roll call.
Yeah. I didn't hear a roll call.
I had asked earlier for a roll call.
On the other one?
She started.
On this one, I started.
We'll do a roll call on the A44. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Drazkowski?
No.
Vice Chair Klom?
Yet.
Representative Dabney?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Hertas?
No.
Representative Koznick?
No.
Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Representative Lean?
Aye.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Pinto?
Yes.
Representative Simonson?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
No.
Representative Whalen?
No.
Representative Joaquin?
Yes.
With the vote being 7 ayes and 8 noes, the A44 amendment is not adopted. Members, we have
spent a great deal of time debating this bill.
Mr. Chair, I have one more amendment. It will be quick, I promise.
We have spent, I'd just like to have that discussion, Representative Joachim, at this point. There is an amendment in here that I know that the County of Ramsey is interested in. It is one that Representative Runbeck authored as a bill. I understand that that there would be people here to testify on it today, and it might be a good amendment for us to end the discussion on, one that we, I think, could put on the bill to go forward and make it a better bill. But Representative Joachim, can we do yours, and then are you interested in doing this one? We don't have to do it today if you don't want to, but I thought I'd offer that as one we could probably do quickly at the end and maybe go over our time just a hair. But Representative Joachim.
We can do this one if there's people here to testify. I'm more than happy to hold off on mine. Mine will be quick. We can do it afterwards.
Okay. Well, let's do yours first, and then we'll do this one.
Okay, if that's whatever the chair chooses. This is the A2 amendment, the A42 amendment.
Right. What was the number again, Representative Joachim?
A42.
The Representative Joachim moves the A42 amendment.
Sorry, I've got new bifocal contacts, so I'm having a hard time adjusting.
So, Representative, are you requesting a roll call?
No, actually. Well, yes, I will ask for a roll call.
Roll call noted. Representative Joachim.
This is kind of, once again, I'm very disappointed that the other one didn't pass. I haven't offered any amendments yet, and I guess I was just kind of being very hopeful that we could treat our local governments like we're treating ourselves up here. And if by your votes you think that a reverse referendum for our cities is right, and I will say right now I'm going to be voting on my own amendment, but I don't see why we're exempting cities under 500. I honestly feel, and I mentioned this Wednesday night just as we were closing, it was really rushed at the end when we started to have a discussion on this, on the reverse referendums, that I think it was Representative Lachesky's bill that she had pulled on the percentage. And I jumped in at the end to try to talk about this and asked Chair Dostkowski why the exemption for the under 500 is. To me, this is another message to our cities. It's not just saying, going to my council and saying, I don't trust you to do your job, but oh, please trust me to do mine. It's saying, I don't trust you to do your job, but those cities that have people under 500, they're just way more trustworthy and smart and have a better relationship with their constituents than you do. So I'm going to exempt them from that. So this amendment actually deletes the section that exempts populations of... it's supposed to be deleting the section that says populations of 500 or greater, so it would apply to all cities and townships counties.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. I will just add, Representative Joachim, and I understand your argument. Again, a large part of the reason for doing this was a fiscal one for the local small cities. Elections, if this would happen on a non-general election year, it would be a special election that would be held in November that they would have to budget for. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we should be having this discussion about reverse referendums and everything. And, you know, in addition to some of the budget decisions, some of the policy decisions we as elected officials make, I think it's also really important to be working, of course, with the voters. And I think a big part of our job does need to be voter engagement. And I get a sense that some of these reverse referendum provisions here are trying to get at that, engaging voters to participate more with what goes on. And when I think about, you know, these reverse referendums being tools to help engage with voters, I don't know that kind of what I'm referring to, we can necessarily legislate that. But, you know, I just think of the ways I engage with voters myself, whether it's door knocks, surveys, e-updates, town halls, whatever. And so, you know, I think we should be really also thinking about how we can work with our elected officials better to engage voters on the local level. And, you know, I think this really does
get to that or that conversation about trust between local governments and the state. I think some of the LGA cuts provisions in this bill, you know, are again part of that conversation. But you know, I just think there are better ways we can do that in terms of coming up with tools to work with voters, to work with local governments. And I think, like I say, I don't know that we can legislate that, but I think it's really incumbent upon all of us to be really looking at our districts and thinking about ways we can do that ourselves. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lane. Other discussion on A42? Hearing none, the clerk will take the roll on A42 amendment.
Chair Drazkowski.
No.
Vice Chair Quam.
Yes.
Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Hertas.
No.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Lanchesky.
Pass. I'm sorry, I don't know how to.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative Marquardt.
No.
Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Simonson.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative Whalen.
No.
Representative Joachim.
Nope.
Chesky votes on. Votes no, please.
There being one aye and 13 noes, the amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
I'd like to move the A24 amendment at this time, if we could, please.
Representative Dabney, we are nearing our time. We actually are past our time for adjournment. How many amendments do you intend to offer?
We've got three or four more, I think, that we could offer. I'm not sure. I haven't checked the cart in my office.
Can we get them done quickly?
Well, you know, you put out, hopefully, you know, one of the things I've always enjoyed about being a member of this body is the discussion and the debate. You know, the legislature should be and can be a deliberative body. And I enjoy the knotty questions, the pretzel logic we sometimes get ourselves into. So it really does depend on the debate. We throw out what hopefully are some provocative ideas, some opportunities to improve the bill or think about things in a different way. It'll depend in part on how people on my side of the aisle respond to the ideas and how people on your side of the aisle want to respond to the ideas.
That's a no.
Well, Representative Dabney, you know, we have been here now for 15 hours on this bill. Mm-hmm. 15 hours. For contrast, the Education Finance Committee, which you're on, locked up or finished up your bill yesterday in 90 minutes, I understand. 11 amendments that they put on there. We have had over 18, or had 18 offered here so far. 15 hours. We have staff around the table here who we kept here till midnight the other night as they tried to get together all of the details of not only this bill but the tax bill that needs to be brought together in the next few days as we come forward here so that we can get our bills together. They're here regardless. As a matter of fact, they were here last weekend as we were putting this division report together on Saturdays and on Sundays. And we have in front of us Saturday and Sunday, and these folks need to take care of what they need to do. The work doesn't change for them. The only thing that changes is a narrowing of the time that is available for them to get this work done. And for those in the minority, if you want to see the tax bill farther ahead of time, I would suggest we we put an end to the onslaught of amendments coming forward here, and let's get down to some, like I mentioned, I've got an amendment that the County of Ramsey has here that they've talked to me about early in session. It makes sense. It's not controversial. I think it's one we could put on the bill. We could call an end to this discussion, take a vote on the bill, which is going to happen sooner or later anyway, and we can head home. Representative Simonson has a long trip. Representative Lean has a long trip. Representative Markwood has a long trip. Representative Anderson has a long trip. Mine's an hour and a quarter. It's not that far. It's not a huge deal. But these folks have a ways to go. And I think we need to, out of respect for them, focus on the amendments at this point and focus on the discussion that's going to be more substantive, that's going to help move us forward and improve the bill. With that, Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, if I am sensitive to the issue of staff. I've said many times, and I'll say now to you and to all the staff present here at the table and in the audience, my appreciation for the work they do. We've commented many times in my years here about how, we get to go home and they have to stay and do more work. This staff is incredibly responsive. I experienced that just today with some of the staff when I had very quick turnaround requests. They're deeply knowledgeable, what they don't know, they know where to find. And they do that, and I'm grateful. I would remind you, however, that the GOP majority is proposing cutting their pay. I'm certain that they appreciate the thank yous that they are given, and I hope they are given them often, and I hope they recognize the sincerity of that. But I would imagine they also appreciate the paychecks, because none of us show up here on a volunteer basis. We're all paid to do it. And they work hard, they're well educated, they're deserving of everything they get and more, and your party is proposing cutting their pay. So the concern about the staff is well placed, but I fear a little hollow when it isn't complete. Now, Mr. Chair, the agenda that Mr. Rubius put out yesterday was, to my recollection, unique in my time here, my 15 years, because it actually had an end time. I've never seen that I can recall a committee agenda not just say what time we're going to begin meeting, but what time we're going to end meeting.
Representative Dabney,
Mr. Chair,
you may want to look back at our other agendas from earlier meetings too, and I'd actually ask staff to add the end time, the 10 o'clock end time, to our agendas, just as a reminder, as we had those discussions at our regular committee meeting times. And I would suspect that was why the staff added an end time to it. Now, I wasn't aware of that end time being added to it, but we have added end times in the past regularly, if you take a look at those.
Mr. Chair, I would...
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would argue that that's a different situation. Perhaps Mr. Rubius could check if there's any other committee asking to use this room today that's scheduled in. But I do recognize that... we have a compact schedule here at the House, and that we need to move committees through in a timely fashion. There's been any number of times when I believe Rules has regularly met in the basement hearing room at 10:15, and it's 10:03, 10:04, and we're finishing up, and they're trying to hustle out of there. We've had similar challenges with education finance at times in room 5. In fact, yesterday we were, if I recall correctly, pressed for time because another committee wanted into room 5 while we were finishing up the K-12 finance bill. Now, the K-12 finance bill did take less time than this bill, and what they have in common, I'll admit, is deep disappointment in their content. But I would remind you that I don't know that the education finance bill even has one-tenth of the funding in it that this bill could have. And when you hardly have two nickels to rub together, metaphorically, it's kind of hard to spend much time focused on how you're spending those two nickels. That's a deeply disappointing bill that in the face of a $2 billion deficit and education funding that has dropped to, I believe it's 24th in the nation on a per pupil basis, when we used to be much stronger as a state. Education funding that has lagged inflation. Education funding that has missed some targeting. Education funding that actually shifts back onto the property taxes, more costs in that bill. I would hope that that bill is coming through the full committee, if not this division, to discuss the shifts in funding from state revenue to property taxes that are involved there. There's just a whole lot of disappointment there and not a whole lot to say. This bill is a whole lot of disappointment, but there's a little bit more to say. And we've tried to engage the majority in meaningful dialogue. They've spent most of their time, from what I can tell, maybe playing games on their computers and not actually engaging in the debate, not actually bringing your party's ideology to the table. Because what we see here is a bill that's full of ideology and a long ways from reality. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A24 amendment, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Dabney moves the A24 amendment. Roll call has been noted. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Mr. Chair, you've got some provisions in the bill that undermine the local government aid system in the state. It's a system we've had in place since the early 1970s, where then Governor Anderson showed up on the cover of Time magazine with a scrawny little northern. My family was living in Illinois at the time. We were pleased to see Governor Anderson on the cover. We were disappointed to see the fish. But it's a system that's worked for Minnesota. It's helped make sure that our communities across the state can offer the sort of services that our citizens and our business community across the state needs and wants, and to do so in a way that's affordable. The division report before us, however, starts to really undo that. During the 2000s, when the state was facing repeated deficits by choice, the economy was challenging, but they were deficits by choice. We cut local government aid. Representative Lincheski has talked very clearly about how she's voted repeatedly to cut local government aid. But we targeted some cities more than others for those cuts. But we did it in a way that was thoughtful. We did it in a way that was public. We did it in a way that was logical and nonpartisan. Didn't matter whether you were a city represented by a Democrat or by a Republican. If you met the criteria in the proposal, your aid was cut. It was not blind. It biased towards protecting greater Minnesota local government aid revenue, but it was done in a public way. The provisions on local government aid in this bill have certainly the appearance of partisanship. They target only three cities. They do no work in reviewing the reformed local government aid formula that was created 2 years ago with broad bipartisan support. They just target some cities and leave the rest alone. In fact, in the case of my city, it targets us repeatedly. My city has long talked about the fact that in many respects, we are the economic engine of the state. We send far more in taxes to the Department of Revenue than we get back in any forms of aid. And my city has long thought, you know, maybe it's time that we become conscientious objectors and refuse to participate in the local government aid system anymore. Instead, let's just keep the tax revenue that we generate. We've had a lot of conversation about local option sales taxes today in Minneapolis. Let us keep that revenue, and let us then contract with the state, contract with other entities as we see fit to get the services that our constituents need and want, our businesses need and want to be able to function. Let us keep the other state taxes. Instead of sending them to the state, let's take our ball and go home. Let's keep that money. Contract, we can. It would be the only property tax savings broadly for 500,000 Minnesotans in this bill. Would be if we were allowed to keep the taxes that we generate and buy the services that our business community and citizens want. So the A24 amendment simply says, if you're a city, statutory or home rule charter city, you get to keep your taxes. Doesn't apply just to Minneapolis. I was talking about my city in, as one specific situation, but it was one way of doing it. That was just one example. Allow them to keep their revenues that they generate, make their decisions. Brings all these decisions closer to the people, where that's more responsible and more, excuse me, more responsive. With that, Mr. Chair, thank you.
More discussion on the A24 amendment. Hearing none at this point, the chair will go into recess until 1:30. Okay, members, I call the meeting back to order. Our 1:30 got away from us a little bit, but we are back in order. Representative Dabney on the A24 amendment.
You know, Mr. Chair, in the interest of time, why don't I withdraw the A24 amendment?
Okay, thank you. Representative Dabney withdraws the A24 amendment. Members, any other discussion? Is there...
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
I do know that I think Representative Pinto at least was intrigued by the Ramsey County amendment you've referenced.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Dabney. The chair would move the A15-0498 amendment. And I'm wondering, is the gentleman from Ramsey County here? If he could come forward and explain the amendment and the situation, that would be helpful for the committee. Thank you.
Chair, you know, Chair members, I'm Nick Wright, Government Relations for Ramsey County, and this is Stephen Baker, County Assessor. County Assessor.
Okay, welcome, Mr. Riley and Mr. Baker. If Mr. Riley, if you would proceed and describe the bill to us, if you would.
Yes, Mr. Chair, this is basically a cleanup from last year. When a person has to repurchase property through a tax forfeiture, currently they can be charged up to, well, the floor is 10%. It can go higher, up to 14%, and we want to make this just 2% above the usury rate, the prime rate, which is currently you'd be charged about 5% on a repurchase on a contract for deed. And it's at the county board discretion, and I'll let Mr. Baker explain more.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Okay.
Introduce yourself again, if you would.
Stephen Baker, County Assessor for Ramsey County. Thank you for your time. Last year, the legislature reduced the floor of the interest rate charged on tax forfeit transactions, if you will, for confessions of judgment from 10% to 5%. So it's a floating rate, but it can't go below 5. But it left, the statute's pretty complex and convoluted, and it left in place other areas that where that 10% floor remains in place. And so the two we're trying to address are where an owner on a property is trying to repurchase their property after it's actually gone forfeit, or when a county board is selling a tax forfeited property on a, under a contract for deed, we could then charge a rate of 5% instead of the current 10%. So this is an effort just to really get equity or parity between the different groups and try to get the interest rate charged on these for these folks, these individual citizens, to a rate that's really more in line with where rates are in today's environment and help them get back on their feet.
Thank you, Mr. Baker. Members, questions for Mr. Baker or Mr. Riley on the amendment, which, as I understand, is supported by both Senator Rest and Representative Runbeck. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hadn't known about this before today, so I'm just getting myself up to speed, and I just wanted to confirm that the Ramsey County Board, I'm from Ramsey County, is supportive of this. We talked offline, but just want to confirm that.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Pinto, yes, absolutely. This is one of our top priorities at the Ramsey Board this year.
Okay. And then
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I guess I'd love to, Representative Hertas, is, I think, has great, far greater expertise than I do. I understand he's supportive of this, and I guess I'd just love to hear from him on this as well, and then and I'll be settled on the matter.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pinto, yes, as described by the testifiers, it basically, you know, presumably the statute was kind of written back when the days we had 20% prime interest rates and interest rates were very high, and people found it more advantageous to not pay their taxes than to get a loan at the bank. So the rates were set higher, but, the, you know, the circumstances have changed. And right now, for somebody who's falling behind and is in danger of losing their property to non-payment of homestead taxes, they can go to the county and enter into a confession of judgment, which puts them on a payment plan for paying their taxes. And what this bill does and what was changed is that in a confession of judgment before foreclosure, you have a smaller interest rate. But if they actually went to foreclosure and then wanted to, were able to redeem their property and wanted to work out something with the county, they were stuck with the higher rate statutorily. And then the last component, as they mentioned, was with regard to property that would be conveyed by the county at their discretion. It's not mandatory. But if they should use a vehicle of contract for deed financing, the statute prohibits them from charging a market rate other than the statutory rate. And so I think it's a great thing for consumers. It's a positive step, and then most importantly, it gets these properties back on the tax rolls.
Thank you. Other questions or comments, members? Hearing none, all in favor of the A15-0498 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Other discussion, members, on the A15-0452 amendment as it stands, as amended. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with your permission, Mr. Chair, and Lead Dabney, I thought I would just make some final comments on this division report. And I know that, you know, I want to first thank Lead Dabney for all his work. And I know some of you think it's been sheer torture, but I personally want to thank Representative Dabney. I mean, he's really worked hard to demonstrate the minorities' values within the property tax report. And Chair Drazkowski, I really want to thank you. I was just saying in the hall to another member, you've been a really great chair. You've been classy and calm, and I've really enjoyed it. I will tell you, I didn't know what to expect. And for those who are thinking that the minority has been a little difficult the last few days, boy, you were really difficult in the minority. I remember well your.
Does that mean effective representative?
I don't know. But, you know, so honestly, because I had not seen you chair a committee before, I mean, I think in taxes, you know, we've always rotated gavels with all the members. You know, I didn't get to see you chair your own committee, and I really think you've done a great job, and I mean that genuinely. It's been fun, and I've had a good time getting to know you a little better, and all the minority members as well. There are some new ones, and so this is the way, honestly, that we get to know each other a little better is through some of these debates. And of course, the majority and the minority members are really been contributing this whole year, and it's really a pleasure to be with everybody and all the staff. And yes, the staff is tired. We understand that, and they've got a lot more to do. But you know, having said all that, I did have quite a few more amendments, and I just want to mention a couple. I wanted to really try to convince you, Mr. Chair, to reconsider the OTC loophole where the communities like Bloomington are not receiving
all the taxation they should from the lodging tax because the online travel companies aren't paying it. So hope you'll think about that. It's not in this bill, but it's important to my community. And that's actually the only bill I introduced this year that came to this committee. So I was kind of hoping I might get one, but nope, got blanked. So I also had another amendment, Mr. Chair, to have a conversation with you further about zip rail, and that would be, it was kind of a tongue in cheek to sort of ban the rail going through your district and in fact put a toll road on Highway 52 through Kenyon so that
It'll be Highway 56.
Whatever it is, yes. Ms. Dalton, you know, she's amazing. She had to draft this thing and help me with it. But anyway, you know, I was trying to make the point, and you and I disagree on zip rail. I actually, and I want to say again, I think the Olmsted County Commissioners and the people in Rochester are wrong in that they, I think, believe that there will be a zip rail somehow with no public subsidy. And I don't think that's possible. Again, you don't ever want zip rail. I'm not sure, but I do think prohibiting any public money ever for that concept, if you hate rail, that's a good provision. But if you think that someday someone might want to have that, I think putting in law a strict prohibition is a bad idea. And the reason I drafted, Ms. Dalton drafted language for me about your area would be, you know, let's have a tollway, meaning, you know, there are lots of modes of transportation through your district and everybody else's that get public subsidy. And they all get public subsidy, so the roads do too. So I wanted to, do that via amendment, but I won't. I had a few others, and I won't even go into those. But, you know, I do want to just say that I think we have a long road to hoe here. I wish there was some homeowner and renter property tax relief. I understand the desire to have the business community not pay the statewide commercial industrial property tax, but the choices to trade off the other things that we're going to decide at the end, by May 18th that we could fund schools, higher ed, the environment, the transportation system, you know, it's not worth it to me. In part because while I, in a perfect world, I would get rid of that tax, it's regressive, it's going to cost $2 billion a biennium forever. And nobody's made a compelling argument to me that the loss of that revenue is worth the loss in education funding or other alternatives that will happen in the budget process. I also just want to say that, you know, I have some disappointment about the likelihood of a bill like this getting very far with either the Senate or the governor. So I think it's kind of setting us up for a situation where it's going to be a rough 4 weeks. But, you know, these are the values of the majority, and I respect that, and I hope you can respect that our amendments were an attempt to demonstrate ours. And just thank you for your time, and appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lencheski. Other discussion? Representative Joaquin?
I want to thank the chair, too, as a freshman member. I know I probably breached a quorum a million times and stumbled through things, and it's, you always think as staff, you know what's going on, but until you get on this side of the table, there's just a little flavor over here. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you for hearing the two bills that I did have before your committee. I would echo Representative Lencheski. I'm bummed out they didn't make it. This old shop, this old house provision, I'm still getting emails from people saying they support it. So I'm a little frustrated, but that's okay. I'm glad the discussion was there. But with this bill, as Representative Lencheski said, we had to make choices. And it's about choices, and it's about the message we're sending to people. And, you know, the choices with this bill were a 30% tax cut for businesses, 800,000 people getting tax increases, and despite our efforts, little to no tax breaks for individuals in a direct property tax relief, or property tax rebate, renter's credit we tried, senior tax relief, increase in LGA, increase in township aid, increase in county aid. They were all voted down on 39 votes, and it's a little frustrating, but I get it. And I really do believe the message we're sending to our local governments in this bill is saying that we don't trust you to do your jobs. And maybe that's just a philosophical difference we're going to have. We're saying that tax cuts to businesses matter more, and that might be a little different, too. And we're telling the people in Duluth, St. Paul, and Minneapolis that they can bear more of the burden. I think it was earlier on Thursday, Representative Pinto quoted Hubert Humphrey. And that quote is known by, I'm sure, everybody in this room. You walk by it up on the Capitol lawn and with the new memorial. And what we do here really is a moral test for the government to see how we treat those in the dawn of their life, in the twilight in their life, and in the shadows. And the one thing we get to do up here is set together policy and budget that I really do think is a moral document in how we want to treat people. I just want you to think about that when we send this division report out. Thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you. I want to echo the thanks for the way you've conducted business in the committee. And I guess I know that at some point in my service I may serve in the majority, and if I do, I hope that folks on our side are as gracious in the majority. I hope that folks who may be in the minority, I like to think the minority has done as it's supposed to do as well anyway. So I appreciate the way you've conducted business here. And I'm also grateful to you and to folks, really the entire committee, for the amendment that did make it on from the minority in my own community. I also want to echo the thanks to the staff for the work that they've done and continue to do, and it's extraordinary. I'll keep my comments on the bill brief. I have deep concerns about all sorts of aspects, as I know my colleagues we've discussed and will discuss now. I continue to be most deeply disturbed by the LJ provisions. And I like to think that it's less about the effect on my community and the effect that will have on the state because of the cuts to my community and to these other communities. And it's really more about the long-term sense of things. As we pointed out, every person, I think maybe not every person around the table, but most folks around the table do in fact represent communities that receive high amounts of LGA per capita compared with this target that's being set. And contrary to yet another statement from Chair Davids that was in the Star Tribune the other day, these are communities where a very significant proportion of their budget comes from LGA as well. Actually, that might be a good correction, another correction to make on the House floor. For some of these communities, LGA is a very, very large percentage of their budget. And by taking this system that results in communities represented by all of you and giving and a system that is blind to politics at the moment, maybe politics went into putting together the formula, we can discuss that, but it's blind to results for individual communities instead of taking into account needs and other things. By messing with that formula and aiming it at a couple cities, for as far as I can tell, or just let's just face it, that these are communities represented by certain folks and certain in one party, that to my mind does have a very dangerous effect on that program going forward. I hope that that we all will keep that in mind as this language continues, and perhaps could recognize the danger to all of us, to all the communities we represent, and might say this is not actually an area we want to mess with. If we want to save money through LGA, fine. Let's do it through a means that does not aimed at these individual communities. The focus in the bill on tax giveaways for corporations as opposed to for individuals, I think, is wrongly placed, and a number of other components, and I think that through our amendments we've really pointed that out. Many of those things, though, are ideological distinctions and differences of philosophy and kind of where government should be placed. That's all well and good. But when there are 800,000 Minnesotans that are going to have their property taxes raised and their services cut for, I did not hear a response to my challenge in all this time, for really no identified reason as far as I can tell, that I think does undermine faith in all the work that we do. So I hope that that's something we can address as the bill moves forward. Mr. Chair, thank you again for the time that you've given, for your graciousness, and appreciate it.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I do want to echo the thanks to you for your patience and your indulgence over the last couple days. I think my DFL colleagues do have some very legitimate concerns with the division report, as well as I do. I also would have liked to have seen more direct property tax relief to homeowners and renters and seniors and
working families, working folks across the state. You know, the cuts to the LGA are troubling, especially after a lot of the work we put in over the last 2 years into revamping that formula and revitalizing the program. But I do recognize there are several stops along the way here, and I know being in the majority, your party is going to put its priorities forward, and that's just how democracy works. That's how the system works, and I just really hope that we can, like I say, there are many stops along the way here before the bill gets to the governor's desk, and I hope some of these improvements can be made. And you know, this vote today, this decision today is pretty difficult for me. I think when we all win elections and get election certificates, we have to balance our conscience with our constituents in every vote we make. And Mr. Chair, I do appreciate the border city provisions you put in for the western Minnesota border cities. And with that, I guess I do appreciate your patience and willingness to work with the minority party over the last couple days. Thank you.
Representative Simonson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, note to self, don't talk late in the agenda because you run out of things to say because it's already been said. So let me say this, Chair Drazkowski. I think you and I are about as politically opposite as perhaps a couple of people can be. But I want to say, and I'll say it on the record, that I have gained a lot more respect for you, okay? And I appreciate the fact that we can walk out of this room and we can just have a conversation with a good tone. So I appreciate that. And I would certainly respect your political positions, and I appreciate the fact even more that we can walk out of here and just have a conversation about whatever. So thank you for that. I think it's been said a couple of times, but I also want to thank staff for just the incredible effort that they put into this division. And, you know, you can't say thank you enough for the work that they do and will continue to do. But with respect to the bill, you know, I've spent, I don't know, over a couple days. A couple hours. I've made my points, you know, and I think there's a number of things in this bill that I would consider to be harmful to Minnesotans, and I think I've made those points enough times that I don't have to repeat them, and I think some of them have been said here again today as we close out this discussion. But one of the things that I would just like to leave you with is just some thoughts about, you know, politics and where it belongs in the process. And I think I truly believe that there's a time and a place for politics in this process and in this body, and we certainly see that, you know, every day here. But I'm not convinced in my mind that tax policy is the best place to play politics. And it's a little bit frustrating when I see, you know, the local government aid initiative in this bill that came from Representative Quam, and I thought I understood it, you know, in terms of the reasons why, and I listened very carefully to all of the discussion over the last few days, and I just cannot really understand why. So I'm going to go home this weekend. And, I mean, it started already. People want to know what's going on. Why is local government aid to Duluth being cut? And I have to try to explain that. And I still, to this hour, do not know why. Everybody in Minnesota knows that the legislature is faced with a nearly a $2 billion surplus. And I have to go home to Duluth and explain to families and folks that under this proposal, their property taxes are going to go up significantly. And if I don't understand that, it becomes very difficult for me to come up with a logical explanation why. So at this point, you know, there's nothing more that I can say about that outside of the fact that, you know, this is the tax committee, and magical things happen in the tax committee. So there is still hope until the end of the day that we can come together and figure something out. But with that being said, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that. But I do want to thank you for your work as chair.
Representative Markwood.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I want to echo the sincere comments of our other members. So thank you for your very fair and efficient, the way you conducted these meetings. I thought it was very, very good. And I think everyone felt they had the proper discussion and their views were heard, and I appreciate that very much. I'd also like to thank Lee Dabney for, I think, especially in the last few days, really pointing out the contrast between the views that we have on this bill. So thank you so much for that. Mr. Chair, there are a couple things I do like in the bill, of course, and one is the ag property tax relief, which we've talked about. But one thing we really haven't talked about, and that's moving up those truth and taxation meetings into October instead of November. Good luck with that.
Is that in the bill, Representative Marquardt?
No.
I didn't think it was.
Is it in the bill?
No.
We heard that, though. I thought that's not in all that referendum stuff.
No, it's moving up the elections.
Oh, it's moving up the election?
No, you know, when your head hits the wall, Representative Marquardt.
Oh, I thought, okay, I'm sorry about that. I actually thought that was in the bill. So, well, we said, you're being tax committee. I liked your idea that was because I always thought they should come out before the elections, either local elections or state elections.
Well, Representative Marquardt, I don't know if you remember, but Mr. Carlson said that it was impossible twice.
Yes.
And
unless we change.
Yeah. So that was Carlson K, and that was
Mr.
pretty
chair,
pretty good.
And we can send man to the moon and safely back here on Earth, but we cannot move the truth of that. So, well, I will conclude my comments. I thought that was in there. So, but I am concerned about the local government aid cuts because I do think it hurts the credibility and actually the future of local government aid, which would really impact rural Minnesota. So, and I've stated that before. That's a big concern. I guess my last comment is maybe a rhetorical question, and I'm not asking anyone to answer that, but how can we justify providing $2 billion of tax cuts to businesses, many of them wealthy corporations, and only provide $157 million for education? I mean, that's like $12 of tax cuts for $1 of education. And that, I think, philosophically is probably the biggest problem I have with the bill is the statement it's making. So with that, again, Mr. Chair, thank you for the way you conducted yourself on this as the chair. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're at that point where I think everything's been said, but not everybody has said it. So it's my turn. But I will start with thanking you for the courtesy and steady hand on the gavel, which you have exhibited throughout this session. Every Wednesday morning, and particularly, Wednesday of this week, Thursday of this week, and now Friday of this week. And the courtesy with which you have treated the minority as well as the public. I do find the bill disappointing. I don't think that's a surprise. I think we had a real opportunity here with a $2 billion surplus to do some good things for Minnesotans. I believe in this state. I believe in it deeply. I believe in the people of the state. I believe in the communities of the state. I don't think this bill responds to the needs, the strengths, and the desires, and the opportunities in this state. I do see, however, that it responds to some special interests. Huge property tax cuts for business and nothing for the average Minnesotan. The risk is greater than the reward in the property tax cuts to business that you propose. They're ongoing, they're permanent, they destabilize the state budget. I was here in 2001 when we made some of the same mistakes of destabilizing the state budget in not taking a balanced and prudent view. It took us 10 years or more to get out of that. In the meantime, we damaged a lot of Minnesotans and a lot of Minnesota, and we shouldn't do that. I also see in this bill a
disinclination or refusal to really do the hard work on the property tax system. There's been a great deal of rhetoric over the last 3 years that I've served on this committee about how we have to simplify the property tax system, how it's too complicated, how people don't understand it, and how they resent it because they don't understand it. And yet, this bill proposes making the property tax system more complex, harder to understand, and less responsive. I don't think that's the right direction either. The proposed cuts to local government aid are disappointing in that they divide the state. They create winners and losers, not based on formulas that make sense, but on arbitrary decisions. I don't think we get stronger when we divide. I think we are stronger when we are united. And I see them as dividing the state along partisan lines. Representative Simonson spoke eloquently about the place for politics and the place for policy. And I think property taxes are a place for policy. The proposed local government aid not only targets my city and two others and hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans, they undermine the whole local government aid system, and that damages Minnesota deeply. We offered up some opportunities. We offered up Representative Anderson's bill to put more money into local government aid. Most of that money would have flowed to greater Minnesota, and your side declined. We offered up Representative Backer's bill on county program aid. We've got 25 rural counties in the state that are losing county program aid because of the distortions of the current ag property tax or ag land values. Those counties deserve our attention. They're not getting that in this bill. We offered more assistance for townships, the smallest level of government we've got. It was turned down. We offered direct individual property tax assistance to both homeowners and renters, to millions of Minnesotans across the state who chafe under property taxes. It's the most regressive tax we have. You pay it whether you've got the income or not. You pay it on a good day, you pay it on a bad day. Businesses pay property taxes whether they are successful or not. Good year, they pay their property taxes. A bad year, they still got to pay their property taxes. We could have provided direct property tax relief to individuals in the state, and this bill chooses not to, and instead, well disproportionately, providing property tax relief to businesses. As others have noted, there's a number of other steps along the process, and I hope that those issues and others in the bill get cleaned up before it hits the governor's desk, because I'm hopeful that we can end on time and in a way that actually benefits Minnesotans and strengthens Minnesota going forward. And there's a number of challenges in this bill and throughout the other omnibus bills moving forward in this body right now to get us to that point. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call on the final vote.
And the roll call has been noted. Thank you, Representative Dabney, for that. On the A15-0452 amendment, members, I need to remind you that this is, we'll have to pass the amendment, and that's on to the House File 984 bill, and so there'll actually be two votes. Any other discussion before we move closer to a vote?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify the hand gestures, I don't believe we need a roll call on the motion on the amendment, but I will ask for a roll call on the final.
Okay, a roll call on the final vote on House File 984 when we get there. Before that, and thank you for your kind words, and thank all of you members in the majority. Representative Hertaus?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to add, with regard to how it is that we work together here in the legislature. And anecdotally, I might just tell you a quick little short story. I grew up in a predominantly Jewish community in the metro here. And the first time I met my wife, took her out late in the evening, we concluded with what used to be the haunt of my friends and peers. And when I introduced them, she interacted with them. And when we left that evening, she said, "These people are your friends?" And I said, "Well, yeah, absolutely. It's okay to disagree about things." And that's a unique thing, I think, about those of us here in the legislature, we may ideologically disagree, and we may kind of go at the jugular and debate vociferously on the floor or in committee or whatnot. But, you know, when we step out of the room or whatever, we're all courteous to each other. We all get along. We're all respectful. And that's part of what we're supposed to do here, to take care of the people's business. So with that, members, you know, I just wanted to say that I think we're all here for one good purpose and cause, and that is to advance the causes of Minnesota. And you know, we're not we have a history here of a majority swinging back and forth. We're a very divided state, and oftentimes certain constituencies get, or at least feel like, they've been left behind. And so some of us, when we are in the majority, we come here to represent them. And it doesn't mean it's a permanent, but, you know, Representative Dabney did mention about the regressiveness of property tax and that individuals have to pay it regardless of their ability to pay and the income. And that's true of the businesses, too. And business has gone through a heck of a hard time during this recession. And whether or not they're profitable, they still have to pay that state general levy. We do have an excess right now. I'm happy to target those smallest entities all across the state will benefit from this. And so with that, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to speak. Members across the aisle, thank you for working together with you. And I hope that we can continue this manner of civility throughout the remainder of the session. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Other discussion, members? I would like to just first of all thank everyone here, the members of the majority, the members of the minority. We have had some very sometimes intensive, certainly very thoughtful, and certainly last but not least, very thorough discussions here, not only on this bill, but even, you know, things like the twin score and other things. And I've appreciated that, and actually, you know, in reflecting back over the last 3 days, it's been, you know, a lot of hours, but certainly learned a lot more about many of the members around the table, and that's always a good thing. And I echo what Representative Hertaus said. And one of the things that I've always appreciated in serving here, as I talk to folks back home, you know, we all come here with 134 different ideas, and 134 different ideas of how to bring those ideas forward. And sometimes, although it's the minority of the time, we fight like cats and dogs. But each time, whether we're coming to a bill together on the House floor that's unanimous, which is, you know, actually the bulk of the votes that we do take, regardless of what the media reports, that is the fact, whether Republicans are in control or Democrats are in control, whether it's one where we've got a very contentious issue and we do fight like cats and dogs for a brief amount of time, but then head out with members of the majority and the minority and sometimes have a beer together or go to grab a coffee or whatever it might be. So I appreciate that, and I think we've had some moments of those times, both of those times, in this committee going forward. So I appreciate everybody's contribution to this bill. I know it's not something that everybody can support, but at the same time, I think everybody had an opportunity to provide some input into it. I'm happy with and proud of the fact we were able to include a good number of provisions from both the minority and the majority in the bill, which I think is good. And, you know, back to, I think, the philosophy of the majority is that, you know, we are interested in providing some relief to taxpayers throughout Minnesota. And, you know, $500 million in tax cuts, of which $450 million approximately are for the statewide business tax. And, you know, that goes to our smallest businesses, and even in, I don't know if there is a business in that community of five, Ms. Dalton, but if there is one, I would bet they're fully exempt from their state business tax in this bill. And there's a bunch of them between them and the biggest skyscraper in Minneapolis that are going to benefit from this bill. And as we look throughout rural Minnesota, I think Representative Marquardt and Representative Anderson, there's a lot of our rural towns that probably every business in town, or nearly every business in town, is going to have under this bill all of their statewide business property tax lifted from them. and that's going to help our rural communities, it's going to help our metro communities, it's going to help all of them. This is really a regressive tax that we are getting rid of, at least a portion of it under this bill, so I'm proud of that. And also, as Representative Anderson mentioned earlier, the tax relief for farmers that we have, and specifically to the school construction levy, nearly $50 million per year of relief for them going forward. So no longer would they be paying 10 times as much as people who don't happen to farm, but rather 5 times as much as others. So anyway, thank you for your time. Thank you for your indulgence. Thank you for hanging together. And although we're not always a unified team, we're a team of some sort here in the Property Tax Committee as we try to make this thing better. And I'd like to, lastly, before we move on to voting, thank all of the staff members who helped us get where we are here today. Molly Richardson, thank you. Grant Erickson, thank you. Thank you, Stephen Rubis. Gary Kay, thank you for your efforts. Simon Wenzel, our page, thank you for keeping us and getting those amendments out really quickly. We appreciate that. And probably as importantly, maybe most importantly, our nonpartisan staff, you folks have put in a lot of hours, and I know you've got a lot more ahead, and I think we all just stand in awe at not only the depth of your knowledge, but the way that you can turn our ideas into something that we can bring forward in a discussion here. I've been here 8 years, and I'm just still amazed at how it happens. And I've been in your workshop, but I still haven't seen all the parts of it to figure out how it happens. So thank you, Ms. Templin, Ms. Schill, thank you, Mr. Michael, Mr. Hines, Ms. Dalton, Mr. Kleeman, and Ms. Manzi. Thank you all for all you have done to get us to where we are here today. With that, all in favor, one other thing I need to mention, provide, and in the past apparently there's been questions about technical corrections, Representative Dabney, that the staff needs to make as we pass these bills out, in order to, so that the bill and the spreadsheet both reflect the actions of the committee, just strictly technical corrections, giving them the autonomy to make those. Apparently there was one point in history we had to actually open a bill back up again, because inherent in the understanding of passage of this bill is that we are giving the nonpartisan staff the authority to make those as they go forward. So I hope that's fine with folks as we move forward. With that, all in favor of adopting to House File 984, the A15-0452 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes. The amendment to House File 984 is adopted. And with that, the clerk will take the roll on House File 984 as amended.
Chair Druskowski.
Yes.
Vice Chair Quam.
C.
Representative Dabney.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Hertas.
Yes.
Representative Koznick.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski.
No.
Representative Lean.
Aye.
Representative Marquardt.
No.
Representative McDonald. Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Simonson.
No.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative Whalen.
Yes.
Representative Joachim.
No.
Okay, with 9 ayes and 6 noes, the motion passes and House File 984 is adopted. Thank you, members. Any announcements? I just have one, and it's Representative Anderson, go plant corn. Thank you. With that, members, the meeting is adjourned.